That's an interesting sound effect.
Thank you. That's the sound of my lips.
What the f*** is going on down there?
Welcome to episode 356 of WTF and TFW, the one that couldn't quite count correctly. My name is Vangelis, and I'm hosting tonight. I'm joined by Aaron.
Yeah, what, is there ever been a night where you haven't been the one hosting?
Every podcast.
You kind of said it like, oh my gosh, this is a different thing.
Every podcast is somebody's first podcast, Aaron.
I guess that's true.
Where are you from? America. All right. Well, also joining us is TJ Omega. Hello.
Hello, and you'll excuse me if I make strange noises, as Papa John's decided that our pizza should be about 20 minutes late because a pizza guy smashed the lid into the pizza and it was burned anyway.
So is that the pizza you're also getting?
No. I intended to have, like, food in my stomach, like, half an hour ago, and
I thought you meant they called ahead, just took a picture of that monstrosity and said, hey, it's on the way, sorry. It sounds like you guys got a second one coming. Well, hopefully...
This gristled hockey puck of a pizza.
Yeah, here, no tip necessary. You're welcome. Well, I hope it turns out well. I guess this is going to be another time where we have a pizza delivery watch on the podcast.
No. Pizza's here.
Oh, okay.
No, pizza's here.
That's way less interesting, though.
Yeah.
Why even
bring it up? Come on.
I found out when you tell them that you took a photo and you're on Twitter at the moment, they get real quick about replacing them.
Man, I just call them. Well, actually, I've never called anyone about that because for whatever reason, pizza delivery people always seem to like me because it always goes well. They start to get to know me on the phone. They get to know what I want. And then they do the thing that makes me stop calling them, which is they say, hey, I remember you. You want this, don't you? And then I'm like, well, now this is uncomfortable. You had to go and make it uncomfortable.
Congratulations. I can no longer do business with you.
Yep. I don't like commitment. I don't like attachment. This has gotten too real. I'm moving. And that's why I came to Toronto back in 2011.
You're smothering me, Papa John's.
Yeah. You know, it could have been a nice, normal friendship. It could have been platonic. It could have even gotten a little physical. But then you had to go and start making it feel like commitment. Thanks, Papa John. We're here to talk to you today about Transformers, though. I'll let you know right now, I'm a little zony, so we're just going to kind of barrel through this one, and ideally, I won't miss any major headlines that I should have talked about. Although, one of our first headlines we're going to talk about is one that actually, it turns out, was from, like, the 6th of May, and I just never remembered to talk about it. And I wanted to bring it up. And it's one of two things that both seem to come from a very similar anonymous source. The newest one being a picture of Leader Class Thundercracker redone as Leader Class Starscream, that being the Combiner Wars Thundercracker, who is a remold of Generations Leader Jetfire. So it looks like they also made a crown for him and are redoing him as Starscream. This is not entirely surprising, given that in the Combiner Wars comics, Starscream recently, like, changed his body to look exactly like the Jetfire toy, or, you know, Jetfire into Thundercracker toy. But there's proof that it exists. There's even, like, a finished sample, it looks like. I don't know if the crown is removable or not. I believe it probably is, because then I don't think he can transform if it's stuck on his head. But
I think it'd have to be, with the way that toy is.
Yeah. But it looks fine. I'm not running to get Thundercracker, let alone this one. I'm not opposed to getting him at some point, but I'm not in a rush. Looks fine. If you don't like it, there's a whole lot of Starscreams, so it's not a big loss. The Jetfire toy I managed to get for $30 Canadian, and at that price, it's great. At more like $60 Canadian, I start going, huh, and right now that's the state of Thundercracker and Starscream, so I'm waiting. But Aaron, what about you? How do you feel about this new Starscream?
I feel kind of similar to you. At even the older leader price point of 40, he looks pretty good. Sitting here looking at Jetfire versus him, and it's like I can see where they're the same. Mm-hmm. But it's if I saw that without somebody saying Jetfire just before seeing it, you'd be hard pressed to tell the difference.
Yeah.
Or not to tell the difference, to tell that they're not the same or whatever. Yeah.
Well, enough parts are remolded. The color placement's right. Good enough to distract you. I felt that way about Thundercracker too.
But yeah, at the full 50-ish price, I still think that they're salty.
Yeah.
But yeah, he looks real good. I still don't know if Thundercracker's better color scheme versus Starscream on this. They're both compelling.
Yeah, yeah. Thundercracker's now, it seems like, starting to show up in stock at places, so soon we'll have a lot more in-hand looks at him.
Yeah. I think that's definitely also going to be something that kind of sells it one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Of how some of those colors really look on that mold.
Yeah, I mean, the upside to all this is, it, given the statement said last BotCon, it seems like at least as an online exclusive somewhere, there will probably also be a Skywarp if you are someone who is into this version of the Seekers.
I saw a whole bunch of rage over that, of silly, silly rage.
People afraid there won't be a Skywarp?
No, or people doing the classic, now I have to buy three of these because all three of them are coming out type of...
Because you're forced to buy everything.
Yeah.
Right.
You know whose fault that is? Yours. I'm sorry.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Skywarp is not going to hold a gun to your head at the toy aisle.
Hey, look.
He's just not.
Once upon a time, it was, oh god, they never made a Thundercracker, how could they? Now it's, oh darn it, they are making all three, I guess I gotta buy them. Find your happy medium, and, right. And you'll have a nicer morning when you wake up. TJ, how do you feel about this Starscream, or the Jetfire to Seeker remold in general?
The remold in general has always been really impressive to me, because it's not one of those I would think would work, but enough retooling and it kind of does, and I kind of dig how it does that. I'm not necessarily sure I wanted a giant Thundercracker sitting in my shelves. Mm-hmm. No, despite my love of the IDW Thundercracker, but Starscream with the like a added benefit of the crown,
mm-hmm.
that kind of pushes it a little bit for me.
Yeah,
like, that kind of gets me going a little bit more.
This toy, like having had Jetfire in hand, I find this toy tends to look way bigger in pictures than it does in person. So, even though I have Jetfire, I could just put him next to other toys, like, you know, not having the color identity or remolding identity, I really want to see what Thundercracker looks like next to some toys, because Jetfire isn't actually huge. He's tall. I think he pulls off a nice balance between the two, because a lot of his height comes from the extra inch or two from the wings and the big backpack spires. So I feel like I'm a little like, this could work, especially with there being that leader tank Megatron out now. It feels like you could have a decent looking assemblage of the Seekers and Megatron if they end up going through with Skywarp, which I'm sure they will. And I love that the crown is included here. Like, whether or not you even, like, are reading the comics, or if he ends up wearing the crown everywhere in the comics or not, it's a great accessory to just throw in with a Starscream. Because if you don't do it, someone else would do it. And if you got the budget, then why not, you know? Unless we're all being deceived and that crown is actually just like a paper cutout because we're only seeing this from one angle. Which would kind of be really cool, disappointing but cool, if that's the case.
Or what if it was just like paper craft? Not one-dimensional, but like a fold-it-yourself type thing.
That would be even more impressive. Like, I would want to, you know, pat on the back whoever this is on Weibo that put it up. The other thing I want to talk about that is coming from a similar, like, picture of something that I guess we're not supposed to see kind of source is there's a picture of Leader Armada Megatron that is floating around. But if you look behind him, he appears to be standing in front of a box, a completed box or poster or something, for a G2 Superion Combiner Wars gift set. If you look underneath his armpit, Megatron's armpit, you can see one of the aerial bots done up in sky blue. If you look at the top left, it says included trading card for Superion. There's a gold jet arm with a big blue fist. So it seems like they have at least, well, no, because there's a photo of the toy in there. They've gone very far in this. It seems like it's inevitable that someone will have a G2 Superion gift set, and I will get that one way or another. Maybe not right away, maybe sometime down the road. But Combiner Wars Superion is a fantastic set of toys. G2 colors is a perfect redeco. A gift set is lovely. this is like a whole bunch of great things all in a row. Also, hand foot guns in G2 blue kind of makes me excited as well. So I'm all into this. I'm sure that once this thing's nailed down as to where and when it's coming out, everyone working on color coded additional add-on hands and feet for these combiners will probably put out blue ones. So I'm really excited about this. TJ, how do you feel about this prospect?
This is interesting. I mean, I kind of worry about how many molds they're going to use, or like how many uses they're going to get out of the molds, just because they reuse the engineering so much. And I kind of worry about, you know, like how many times can we get the same toys over and over and over?
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I'm thrilled that they're continuing the G2 love that they did for Fall of Cybertron Bruticus.
Like, yeah.
There's part of me that just like, I don't care about Superion. If you're willing to do this, give me the Stunticons.
Oh, I can't see a scenario where that is not at least on the whiteboard, at the top of the whiteboard with circles around it.
I really am surprised that wouldn't come first, just knowing like what that's like a legendary level grail among collectors. Just to have like a modern version of that that's easily obtainable.
I think it's just the Autobot thing coming into play here. Like, who do we do first? Well, let's do the Autobot first because people tend to like them more.
Well, at that point, that will also be the oldest group. So maybe a little bit of time for it to clear out of shelves before offering up another one.
Yeah, yeah. And as to mold degradation, we were actually talking off mic a little bit about this, because some of the earlier reviews of Quickslinger are implying that Firefly mold is starting to already get a little bit loose as of the Quickslinger version. But every report I'm reading and having handled Streetwise is that the Dead End mold seems to be getting better with each use. And given how Combiner Wars appears to have been designed for modular remolds from day one, I feel like precautions must have been taken, if it's possible to take them, right up front, because this whole line feels like it was designed before the molds were cut to be like, we are going to reuse these a ton. I don't know what precautions could be taken other than recycling the molds a lot, but I don't know. I would be disappointed to see mold degradation, and I'm hoping that won't happen anytime soon.
Well, the biggest thing, at least on a production side with that, would be also depending on how frequently or well they're making the daughter molds. So, I mean, you have your master mold that you begin with, and then you have the ones that actually get used in manufacture. And that's always a question of, you know, as long as you have the original masters, it's much easier to then go and kind of remaster the molds.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, making new production molds. And I know a lot of times they don't do that because that is an expensive process and it's just a toy.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something, especially depending on how the modularity of the stuff works, it may be something where they're like, look, because, you know, this is 80% different, we're going to, or 80% the same, you know, we're going to still go ahead and make completely new molds for this. So if one is just a straight, no changes made, it's probably just, you know, using the same shots. But if you've got, you know, a different skin to it, then that might be, even though it's all the same engineering, but different bits on the outside of it, it may be something where on the production side, they've got a different mold set for that.
And I wonder if a G2 Superion might use different plastics for like metallic effects or whatnot. There's a bunch of things that could lead to this going better than worse. But Aaron,
as long as they don't have one that completely disintegrates.
But then it's not real. Then it's not. It's a slap to the face of the fans if my G2 air raid doesn't disintegrate.
I had that air raid.
Me too.
Nothing's left of him, but I had him.
For years, I thought it was my fault before I found the internet. Well, Aaron, how do you feel about G2 Superion as a concept, as a thing that's happening?
I think it's really cool, especially as a box set, because the people that are going to be more likely to be excited about a G2 thing are going to be collectors that are going to get all five of them, or six of them, or however they end up doing that at the end.
Mm-hmm.
With their extra members, and that's going to be the person that is going to be excited by a box set, where they're not going to be like, oh, I just want to get Air Raid. All the others, no. You know,
I wouldn't mind a spare Air Raid. So, like, I, in my display, I'd want a spare one that I just smash with a hammer and, like, lay at his feet.
Well, you have your own issues.
I do.
However, I think at least on the sales side, it's something where it makes a whole lot of sense for them to make it, you know, we know we're going to make the set and sell the set as a set, so we can, you know, spend a little bit more time for the box set and make more value out of that.
Yeah. And in all this, man, how depressed will G2 Bruticus look in that, you know, versus display photo shoot that someone's probably going to do? Oh, dear. I really hope if the Combaticons are happening later this year or early 2016 that this... Actually, here, let me rephrase this. I hope the G2 gift set idea for Combiner Wars happens for all of them. Because... it's an easy redeco. It's one that I personally would love to see. And man, I just want to do it for all of them. Give me G2 Menasor, G2 Defensor. If you do them, G2 Bruticus. And then just make up one if they really are doing Computron. Like, let's go for it. And then do like, hey, here's the G2 like bonus guys pack of Rook, Off-Road, and Alpha Bravo.
What about the fan built?
Yeah, I mean, just do that one in...
G2 fan-built combiner.
Do that one
Victorion.
In... Victorion. Yeah, Victorion done in, like matte black with, like, blacklight reactive paint apps. Like, just go for it. So I'm excited about this. If it doesn't turn out to be anything, like, this is just a concept thing and no one picks it up, you know, bummer, whatever. But I'm happy it's at least being discussed somewhere in the system. Unless this is a very elaborate Photoshop, in which case, damn, you're good at that. And keep it up. You are making some really convincing looking things. Moving on from there, let's talk some new picture picks. Aaron, do you have a new picture that in fact is picked by you to talk about?
So again, I'm just scrolling down the front page and I saw something that really pulled my eye, and it was mostly due to burning.
Mm-hmm.
New Titan Changers.
Oh, man.
Oh,
I just
looks
saw
like
those.
Optimus Prime is wearing bad cosplay in stilts.
Is there any shots of the alt modes for these guys?
No.
Damn it. I want to know what they look like.
Yeah, it's simplified transformations is what they're saying. And I can kind of see how each of them would transform. But
all the kids kind of transforming Bumblebee kind of.
Yeah,
well, he transforms like a Legion class. I mean, it's not a surprise, I think.
I know, but Optimus looks a little different. Like, you can see how the front of the truck comes together, but, like, I guess maybe he just sucks his entire like, body into his legs.
Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, they've got to be selling or else Hasbro wouldn't keep making them. But it seems Titan? Like any time I'm at the store, it's, like, 50 deep of all of these vinyl toys.
Because they keep ordering them, because apparently they do sell really well, or at least the profit margin on their sales versus their production costs.
Yeah, it costs them 80 cents to make, and they can sell it for 10 bucks, so they can deal with having them sitting on the shelves for a while.
Yeah, even when shelf warming, they are a profitable toy line. But yeah. But I got to throw some shouts to Simon Saul Fury here in doing the call out I wanted to see. These are the Action Master elites to regular Titan figures. Yeah. Action Masters. I want one, but they're not going to make the one I want, so... or they're not going to make any of the four that I'd want, so I'm probably out of luck, which is a great thing, because I don't have a stupid reason to buy one of these things that I really don't need. But
it's hard enough to explain the ones that transform very well, that look expensive. You're like, I just spent $30 on this. What?
Well, no, you see, it's hot pink and turquoise. I have this problem. Yeah. I really hope that... I don't know. I hope someone involved in the process, like, puts together what Simon just put together and, like, slips something in there. Just something. Like, if some figure comes out who has a matching alt mode to one of the four elites, just do, like, a redeco and just sell it to Target because they'll buy anything as a Target exclusive.
Yeah.
Like, if that happens, I will get... If this line does an Action Master Elite direct homage as best it can, I'll be interested. And it's a really stupid reason, but it probably also won't happen.
What was it? Target loved that AllSpark Blue for a while. Is there one that you could slip that in on?
Well, I mean, Target loved just getting, like, solid gray Optimuses for a while because they were convinced they could say it's silver.
Yeah.
So I think they're open to anything. We just got to find the right alt mode. I don't think RID has any helicopters.
Find the right target buyer.
Yeah, well, we need a helicopter or a scorpion or a tank or a helicopter. No, a VTOL, which is kind of like a helicopter. This is a helicopter. We need a helicopter. Because I think a scorpion and a tank are less likely. Well, not the right kind of tank. Well, Aaron, thanks for pointing these out, because I was going to if you didn't. I don't even know what the price point is on these. Is it really $30?
No, I just pulled 30 out of my butt.
Okay.
However, the normal vinyls are like 10 or 15.
I am sure these are going to be no more than 20, 25.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine over 20.
Because the whole point is that they are low priced enough for their size that it's an easy buy for your kid.
Yeah. Because 30 yeah. was the weaponizers, and that wasn't too long ago.
Yeah. I did see $25, $30 Titan toys for Avengers. It was a Hawkeye who had, like, lights and sounds. And so this is not new.
Oh, those are those hero ones. No, those are actually, like, interactive across all of them.
Yeah, but they're sold as Titan.
Yeah.
So the Titan brand is branching out. So I guess it was only a matter of time before, you know, simple Legend-style transformations hit it for Transformers Titans. And that's kind of logical, and it does solve the biggest problem with Titans, which is that they are just a big block man with arms that wave around. TJ, how do you feel about Titan Changers?
This is bizarre. Like, okay, I kind of get the idea behind Titans. I've seen kids playing with toys just because they are big versions of their favorite action heroes. Doesn't matter if they don't light up or anything like that. It's an imagination toy.
Yeah.
Again, I kind of see where the market is for it. This just seems like necessity. Like, why wasn't this done from day one? If you can make the transformation that, like, stupidly simple.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if Titan was handled by its own separate office. Thus, it didn't start specializing until recently. Even though there were G1 Titans that were exclusive to a convention to San Diego, I think. So it's weird. Like, this is one of those points where I feel like knowing the in and outs of the production end and the office hierarchy end would make it clearer. But then am I starting to ask for far too much information that I don't really need to know?
I would black bagged and taken away for knowing who in the office is responsible for these.
Either that or getting the response of, what, do you want to work here or something? What's your problem? Why do you care this much about who's sitting in what cubicle, weirdo? And then I'm like, hey, listen.
And I need to know if it was Janet that took the cake. I mean, it'd be neat.
Who's the Goomba that keeps messing up the PR on the Avengers line? And the whole Scarlett Johansson thing, because that reads bad everywhere. So who is it? Because I was having a conversation about that.
It doesn't matter how that conversation gets played.
Yeah, it looks
everybody
terrible.
Everybody that gets involved with that just seems like a horrible human being. And nobody is.
Well, I was talking to Trent, and I had an idea. Because this is a bit of a sidebar, but I figure I'll say it in a podcast. Given the far different initiative from multiple parts of Hasbro, I think that only serves to prove that there are very separate brand managers who often don't talk to everybody else, because that kind of headline is really weird if you are a toy nerd who's been following all this stuff as heavily, because that is a headline I would have accepted at face value 5 years ago easily. And I don't blame anyone who does, because a lot of people only ever hear, yeah, girl toys don't sell, because they heard that years ago. And it's only recently it started to change over. So I think whoever was responsible for some decision in there probably got a pretty hard whack on the wrist. Either that, or if it was the Scarlett Johansson likeness thing, which I know I've heard about from the Hot Toys end, anyone saying anything to clarify that is probably going to get shot in the face by a sniper. So it's a real interesting situation to watch as someone who is vaguely more in the know. Because there is no way anyone can clarify that without throwing themselves or someone else under the bus. So it was really interesting to see. It's a legitimate thing to bring up. Like, I was actually really surprised to hear that, given every other aspect of Hasbro going in a very different direction from that headline. So, and on the bright side, in Canadian Toys R Us's, Avengers Age of Ultron has gotten a pair of two-pack 4-inch scale figure sets, and one of them is just straight up Black Widow and someone else. I can't remember. I think Captain America. So at least in Canada, we do have a decent Black Widow toy presence for the action figure end of Age of Ultron. So I guess American Toys R Us just needs to suck it up and do something about Canada's better, is what I'm saying. Hi, guys.
hey.
So those are the Titan Changers. Let's move on from there. And TJ, do you have a new picture pick?
There were two that caught my eye, and they both go back to the Combiner Wars.
Let's talk about both, because Combiner Wars is pretty cool.
Amazon posted the official non-shiny Photoshop version of Devastator.
Yeah, I saw a great comment, which is, hey, look, it's just Devastator standing there, not in some form of ridiculous disarray.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the toy standing there. Hooray!
Like, his shoulders are connected, and everything actually is shaped correctly.
Yeah, so, I mean, he still has a few mistransformations, like minor ones, but, like, hey, look, when he's not falling over, he kind of looks okay and fine.
I still hold to my concern about how thin those arms are going to look from the front, but just the way they have them there, like, some of the concerns I had, like, okay, the head seems okay there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I heard from several sources that that first shot we saw, that was actually the G1 head just bolted on because they didn't have the toy ready and complete at that point, which makes a lot of sense to me because, like, this looks totally different.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll give it that. So, everything else, like, okay, we got the individual ones now, individual vehicles, and everyone's making a little bit of sacrifice for the whole... And, you know, this is a team effort to actually make this happen. I will live with, like, long haul is just extremely wide hipped and thin armed.
Yeah,
I will live with that.
It looks way
somebody
better.
Somebody has to bear the children.
Well, at that 3/4 angle, it does take like 15 pounds off of him.
Aaron, that is good. He has nothing but childbearing hips. Like, where literally, that's what he turns into.
Where do you think the other five came from? Boomp.
Oh, you just blew up my head cannon.
Yeah. Also, a lot of the elbows look way better in this shot where they are just standing there.
Yeah.
Which is what I was hoping to see, is that, hey, you know what? Okay, dynamic posing maybe won't work for all of them, but if I just have them standing as six guys standing next to each other, they'll look fine.
Well, I'm not going to pose them like a Sentai team anyway.
I'm going to try my darndest. Yeah, these are all looking pretty cool. And I've added Devastator to my wish list just in case Amazon decides to take his page down when they put him up by accident. like for sale by accident. That all happened with Quickslinger and Breakneck recently. By the time you hear this podcast, it won't matter. But yeah. I think it looks cool. Yeah.
Maybe it will if somebody fronts you the $50.
Yeah.
Twitter conversations, if we're a week in the future you'll never find.
I was, that's my knee-jerk reaction. I couldn't resist. Sorry about that, everyone. But seriously, $50. I'll do this right now. TJ, I'm guessing this is filling in a lot of gaps, and generally, it sounds like you're pretty into this Devastator still.
Yeah, I really am. And this is coming from someone who still owns this Hercules.
Yeah.
I that's a great toy. That's an absolutely amazing toy. I want my real Constructicons. I want the ones I grew up lusting after.
Hey, you want the ones that look like vaguely animation model?
Yeah, like the ones I remember from my childhood. You know, I want the little square heads with only a vague amount of robot detail on them.
Yeah, I want Bone Crusher in a onesie. I'm getting him.
I want Scavenger in purple pants, and that's what I'm going to have.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm even excited about that Make Toys recent thing they put up on Upgrade Commander, where they're going to finally do the Yellow Giant as a gift set with all the mold upgrades that Green Giant got. I'm pumped for that! I'd like to probably sell off my 2-pack Yellow Giant guys if they don't end up doing an upgrade set to bring them up to par. But this also looks really good. Like, this looks a lot more like you're saying. Like, this is Devastator. The other ones are pretty clearly Devastator, too, but this one is like... This is like, imagine you're a kid again and all your toys, you know, are larger to you than they are now because you're small. Welcome to this Devastator.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron, you got any reactions to this new, somewhat clearer image?
It looks better, but it's still going to be a pass for me. Mm-hmm. No longer looks like a burning pile of trash.
That's because it's not on fire, Aaron.
Right.
Well, on the box it is.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Well, yeah, it is. But yeah, I, having seen the photos of him from not a straight on angle, I know that those were not the best photos in the world, but they're still, he's still got a super hollow backside and many other things that in my opinion are, subpar. And especially for the huge old stinking price point, I think I'll be passing on it, but I will not begrudge anybody who does get him.
Has anyone figured out those three little robots on his box art that are like shooting at him? Are they just generic robots, or are they supposed to be anybody?
I don't know. One of them has like wires from his back up to his arm as a blaster.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know of anybody that's like that. So
Shockwave, there's backstory.
Yeah, sure.
all right. Yeah, I'm curious to see how this one goes once he starts coming out. I mean, it seems like the hype train has caught a whole lot of people. So I am not suspecting he's going to shelf warm too long, but we'll see what happens. Aaron, I'm sure at some point you will get to handle one. In fact, I'm pretty much 100% sure you'll probably end up handling one anyway.
Yeah, I'll still take a look at him. Like I said, I won't begrudge somebody that gets it or really enjoys it, and I would like to see it in hand. But
yeah, I want to collect your thoughts, put them in a little jar, put it over my bed. About Devastator.
As is your way.
Do we have a date for him yet, or is he still just like summer fall?
I think it's just a season.
Okay. Darn it. I wonder if he'll be out by BotCon. I remember that's what they did with Metroplex. Big Bad, like, overnighted a shipment to get him for sale at BotCon. I'm curious if someone might try to do a similar thing this BotCon. If anyone actually manages to find their way out to the venue from the airport.
Or they ever put up registration.
Why would anyone do that?
Because early bird pricing for dealers ends today, I think.
Yeah, that was a pretty funny FAQ update.
Yeah.
Of like, no, we're not going to actually be hardline on the date if registration is up after the cutoff date. It sounds like they're just going to bump that date. Still no word on how anyone's going to get there from the airport. I did some research after last podcast. So I sat down and I was combing through the Pheasant Run website. My mom's visiting, so we both were combing through it because we both have a vested interest in how these shows are going. And that looks like a golf resort.
Yeah.
And one of its features is that downtown Chicago is less than 42.4 miles away. And the instructions of how to get there are how to drive there from the airport and a whole lot of things that seemed to make it feel like, oh, so I guess that I had been given, like, after putting that podcast up, I was like, maybe there's no way. There must be a shuttle. There must be a shuttle. It's impossible if there's no shuttle or system or anything other than renting a car or driving. So I went and dug, and as of March 15th, that is still the only way to get there. I've had May the 15th.
Okay.
Yeah, March the 15th. What do you want? Registration up already? We got months. Come on, Aaron.
Yeah.
I want to also say two very kind people have actually contacted me saying, hey, if you do make it out there, I can give you a ride because I'll have a car. I really appreciate that. I'm still probably right now. It's not looking like I'm going to get out there for BotCon, but I do really.
But for Brickworld the same weekend you will?
No.
Well,
That's
actually in the city.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, Brickworld is a whole lot closer to Chicago.
You mean it's in Chicago?
Yes, it's
actually in Chicago. No, the flights and everything are turning into an expense that currently I'm thinking it might be great to not have that expense. So
yeah, that's my lack of TFCon reasonings this year is I with new job, I can definitely afford it. But it's, you know what? If I don't go, that's even more money saved.
Yeah, but I always try to find a way to go to BotCon. I usually end up finding a way that's really financially irresponsible. But this year, like, the sheer distance from the airport to the venue is, like, an amazing, like, like serendipitous factor.
Yeah.
I say all this, well, I am sure there will be a solution before this. There is no way there won't be a solution before the show happens. But right now, when I would be doing most of the getting of tickets a month before the thing happens, it's a great way to go, like, the serendipity. It's not meant to be. Yeah. Horrible things to say, by the way. But Aaron, you were saying something.
Again, I don't know if this is a conversation that was on mic or off. It's just one of those things that becomes those hidden expenses of, if all of a sudden you're having to pay for a 45-minute to hour-long taxi ride.
That's $100 set aside.
There and back. That's all of a sudden you're eating up a whole lot of money that you don't think about that you got to pay for.
Yeah, and I mean, rent a car, sure.
Yeah.
And of course, this is all taking into account the fact I don't have to worry about expenses like actually wanting to get interaction with Frank Welker. I'm not in that position. That's a whole other can of worms that none of us have to talk about, because I don't think any of us are interested in the first place.
Nope.
We are very lucky. But sorry, TJ, you're saying something?
No, I was agreeing in your negative opinion, yes.
Okay, I thought you were like, no, I was interested. And I was like, well, I got some bad news for you. get ready to spend some money.
Do you have a spare kidney? Maybe not necessarily your kidney.
Just I have kidney. This golden ticket. It came off a chocolate bar. I don't know if it's worth anything. Yeah, Devastator's looking good. TJ, you had one other new pick you wanted to talk about, too?
That would be the one that I believe you and I are waiting with bated breath for, which is Hotspot's full gallery.
Yeah, as of this recording right now, at least two people have said that they have shipped their piles of loot with Ultra Magnus, because that means Hotspot will come in tomorrow or Monday. So I want to thank them in advance, because surely that is a hard science. That's the science of Murphy's Law. It's going to be Hot Spatterday or Hot Spunday. We'll find out. But he is looking good, yes.
Yeah, he is looking absolutely phenomenal. Like, it's one of those bots that just hits me in every right way. I like the modernization of the vehicle mode. I like the wide shoulders. I like that they went with the head from the cartoon rather than the toy, because that's actually rare for Hasbro to do.
Yeah, and I think it looks really sharp, like really sharp. I got to handle Hard Returns Hotspot, and it is a great feeling toy. I'm really excited to get my own. He's just got that quality, you know. He's one of those Voyagers where it's like, yeah, this is a Transformer. And then the combination aspect is like just the cherry on top.
It's this weird thing. Combiner Wars is very good at like just upping the bar.
Yeah. And
everything I've heard about this toy is that it's going to be phenomenal.
And let me tell you also, I think I said this last time I talked about the, you know, messing around with Hard Returns Protective Bots, but like everything I was worried about on the three remold guys is like anything but a problem. Streetwise feels even better than Dead End. Blades just feels fine, just as solid as Alpha Bravo. And First Aid can actually solidly turn into an arm, unlike Off-Road. So it's like win, win, win. Their head sculpts look amazing. Rook is a Rook has ankle tilts, and it's great. I'm really stoked about these guys. Next couple of, I think about 2 weeks from now, I'll definitely have them in hand if Hotspot does not disappoint. So yeah, fingers crossed. TJ, did you already, I don't know if this is quote unquote spoilers, did you already ship off whatever else you might have related to him?
Wait for it.
Yeah, okay. I guess we'll talk about that.
All right. Sorry, it's something in my throat. Pizza got stuck.
Yeah, it's all the charcoal, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta
chew it through the gristle.
You gotta not get your pizza well done. I mean, ask Aaron about that. He knows all about them food sciences.
They didn't know what I meant by a medium rare pizza.
Well, that's their fault. That's why they're Papa John's, not like Papa Aaron's. Aaron, you should open a pizza franchise.
No.
Papa Aaron's.
No. I don't need to get in the pizza game.
Oh.
Steak, that's where the money's at. I've told you this.
Right, because no one makes steak.
Exactly. Nobody makes steak right.
The way I do. I had some steak when I was out at that resort. And it was pretty good because their cows were the resort's cows. They had, like, they have their own cows and ducks. And it was pretty okay. I liked it.
Roaring apathy with that suggestion. It was all right.
Well, the thing is, thumbs up. Here's what I found with steaks. So I like I have gotten into actual good steaks, right? But when when it's a dish where they try to make the focus just the steak, like the focus is the experience of just the meat, and there's nothing else to it than that, then I actually do fall away from it for a bit because I like it, but I like
You gotta have something else with it, like a good baked potato.
And
or like a good rice, or even like steak fries. They call them steak fries for a reason.
Or even if it's like a steak that's cooked really well, but it's dusted with something cool on the outside crust. Like, I like that kind of stuff. I appreciated the steak. It's actually two steaks in a row now I've had where they were built to be made for someone who gets 100% of their satisfaction out of the flavor of the inner meat and the texture of it and everything. And I was like, these are very well made. These are really good. But I find them a little boring because I guess I'm a bit of a scumbag. And I really did like them, but I was like, I'd like to get, like, I don't know, the crazy chicken thing where they have a chicken breast with the stuff with, like, 15 vegetables or something. I have tongue ADD, you know? I can't take subtleties. I need explosions. I should have just poured, like, a vat of nacho cheese on that steak. Then it would have been exciting.
Oh. Oh, is that a stroke? Oh, God.
It would have been spicier then, too.
Smells like toast. What's going on?
Yeah, watch out, man. You gotta be careful about that. My own new picture pick is going to be something that I'm just stoked about coming out, which is Iron Factory's Pocket Scale Ultra Magnus. And here's the thing that I'm really stoked about. So I've spent months looking at this thing, knowing he's going to be about $55. So he's basically the cost of one of their two packs. And I was like, he's like one of their two packs. But all those accessories, all those multiple figures, all that parts count is just going to go into one guy and his, like, hammer and his gun. And so I was like, he's still kind of pricey, but I see where the price is coming from. We see these inbox images. He comes with two of those accessory pack gun pods as well. So to me, the value of this guy is greatly enhanced because those gun pods are awesome. He's coming with basically the set that every single Iron Factory miniscale figure has come with is two gun pods that break down into like five weapons apiece and a shield and then like just a pair of large guns. So you get just a pile of accessories. He doesn't even need to use them. They're all 5mm compatible. They are covered in pegs and ports. You can just build stuff with them. The fact that he's coming with two is making his price like so much more palatable to me. Granted, I understand those little weapon accessory packs are not everyone's bag. If you don't want them, I'm sure you could sell them for like $5 a piece. So just consider that. I think this guy looks really good. I'm hoping that he comes in sooner than later to time with a trip down south. If not, then I'll wait. I can wait, but I'm kind of stoked about him. Aaron, you've not messed really with any of this Iron Factory stuff, right?
No, I haven't.
All right.
Although I think that Ultra Magnus looks really good. Where's the best place to pre-order him?
Choose your retailer.
Okay.
They all got, like, everyone's carrying Iron Factory now that they've established this reputation of. So the only thing about this Ultra Magnus, which is a hard pill to swallow when you just look at things lined up, if you pre-ordered him and the actual Leader Ultra Magnus, like I had them both pre-ordered to Big Bad, this guy is $10 more than Leader Ultra Magnus, and he's like 3 or 4 inches tall.
You can't look at that stuff though.
I know.
That's you're talking Hasbro versus independent company, and we know this. You're giving yourself a false equivalency.
But I know, I know it is. But that conversation happens so much that eventually I'm like, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong for thinking that because it takes a layered level of thinking to even see the difference. But including those two weapon packs with him, holy crap, his price makes like so much more sense. And Iron Factory have a really strong build quality in all the pieces of theirs I've messed with that were actual figures. So, yeah, Pocket Magnus, man, I'm so excited. If you scroll down in this thread, like they've already done the thing where they take some of their gun pods and just start making them crazy stuff like wings made out of shotguns and other such fun. TJ, did you ever check out any Iron Factory stuff? I don't think you did either.
No, like it's always a little expensive for that size.
Mm.
Like, this is, that's the bad part of me, is that I know it's a false equivalency, but I always think to myself, well, I'd rather have a big Magnus for that price.
I just want both Magnuses, so I'm the worst person.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I subtly agree with you being the worst person.
Yes,
I do like the look of it. I really do like the look of it, and it's the direction I really like with these. Where it's like, you know, if you're gonna make something like this, fill in the gaps in Hasbro's Legends and Legions and whatever you want to call them, and give, like, let me make the Battle of Autobot City on my Metroplex.
Yeah, and another piece of good news, Shapeshift Incorporated, the guys who have, since last year, been working on Fall of Cybertron designs done in this pocket scale, have finally got a pre-order and a date up for their first two-pack. So I feel like if their stuff turns out as good as it looked in prototype form at TFCon, there will be a legitimate little world of all these things between Iron Factory, DX9 Warren Pocket, and Shapeshift Inc., they all seem to be avoiding each other's wheelhouses. They all seem to be aware of you know, as aware as they can be, of not stepping on each other's toes, and it's fantastic. Like, DX9, they are now shipping their Galvatron and Cyclonus, and Iron Factory is shipping their Magnus, and the aesthetic is slightly different, especially in the hands, but they don't look terrible next to each other, especially if you've got that hybrid convoy, like the hybrid G1 Prime, the little Kawamori one that Takara put out years ago. He's like the connective tissue for all of these, and it's lovely. Like, there's something to be said for a fun little toy. So I'm stoked. Very stoked. And that's also my new picture pick. Did I put it into this thing? I didn't yet. I talked a whole bunch without pushing Control V. There we go. I did it. Moving on from pictures, we're going to talk a little listener questionage. So first up, I've got a listener question from Mr. Biatis. This includes a lot of example links that I'm not going to go too deep into. I will probably forget to put them in the thread. So I'll just say now, just, if you don't see them in the thread and you really want to know what they are, just tell me, because I can just copy paste them in there. I'm going to forget. I am going to forget to put them in the thread. I know it. So this question says, hello again, WTF for TFW. Based off of an ongoing thread in the comics forums, and he links to it, I'd like to know if any of you, if any one of you, read the characters in the IDW or any Transformers comics with certain voices. Personally, most of the character voices I read are impromptu, or I haven't been able to pin them down to a certain actor yet, but I do have a list for a few of them. Mr. Biatis' list is very comprehensive, with example links to performances, so I'll just run through the names and characters. Tarn, played by Vincent Price. Galvatron, played by Fred Fred Tataskior as Megatron from the video games. I very much agree with that one. Nightbeat, Orson Welles as Harry Lime. Whirl, Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee. Pharma, David Wayne as the Warden, and he also says he can't really explain that one. Cyclonus, Stéphane Cornicard as Riordan or Stroud from Dragon Age. Ultra Magnus, Mark Hildreth as Sten from Dragon Age. Ratchet, DeForest Kelly, in More Than Meets the Eye only, though, he doesn't seem to be portrayed as old in the earlier IDW books. That's because he's young in those. It's been, IDW came out in, it's like 10 years. So, 10 years ago we first met Ratchet. That's why he wasn't old back then. Cup, Ransom Sherman as Uncle Dennis. Skylynx, Ransom Sherman as Mr. Wellington. Mr. Biatis finishes off by saying, I probably shouldn't get my hopes up for an animated adaptation, considering half of my cast is dead. Just means you got a cultured taste, sir. So, Aaron, in your reading of the IDW books, is there any character that has kind of just, like, hit you as having a certain voice?
Maybe, but nothing that I could recall.
Like, nothing this specific?
Yeah, no. I mean, I imagine some are maybe gruffer than others, or, you know, some, things like that, but no, not, like, direct voices. I don't hear voices when I read.
You need to hear voices when you read.
No.
You need to open up your mind, just let them start speaking. Stop shutting them out.
No, see, because by trying to vocalize what they sound like, you read slower.
Well,
the information just inputs to my eyes, straight to my brain.
You need to just speed up the voices in your head. That's what I do. I told them to get more efficient. They did. That way they can counsel me faster. TJ, do you hear any voices in your head when you read IDW comics? Do they counsel you, or who do they sound like?
No, they don't sound like Randy Orton, if that's the reference you're making.
Well, if they did, then you would take a long time to read any of these books. So thank goodness.
Probably. In my head, most of them just end up sounding like they did the last time I watched them. You know, mostly my brain defaults to the G1 voices from the cartoon, which I will admit, the original Frank Welker Megatron, not the best fit for the type of Megatron they go for right now, especially as an Autobot.
But yeah, I'm trying real hard to figure out what the current Megatron sounds like, because I like him as a character, but yeah, he's like, you can't just say like, oh, David Kaye, because like, no, that's not who this one is. This one's different.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been able to nail him down yet.
Sometimes the voices just kind of end up in my head, just, it's just like an amalgamation type thing. Like, it's a voice I remember from something, but not quite. Like, I remember Rung was like Kelsey Grammer for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But he kind of defaulted into like a nerdier voice.
Yeah.
Like, and the closest I've kind of pegged it down was like the Fugitoid from the 2003 Ninja Turtles.
I don't even remember what he sounded like.
Yeah, it's very nerdy, a little bit high pitched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for a lot of them now, having, especially now that I recently with Kryn did like a full read through of More Than Meets the Eye, like they sound very British to me, because I now went back to issue one knowing how British things can get. And yeah, I don't really have like a specific voice that comes up in my head. Just in general, kind of just Red Dwarf is how it all sounds to me, like particularly Brainstorm. There's just a very Red Dwarf tonage. I don't know even which member of the cast. Just like
it's only four.
I know, and that's the weird part. It's just in my head. It's like I don't know what they sound like, but I know that overall it sounds very Red Dwarf-y to me.
Okay.
And if no one knows what I'm talking about, like holy crap, why didn't you have my childhood where you watched Red Dwarf on PBS marathon all the time? The surprising number of people, TJ, do not know what Red Dwarf is in 2015.
Are you kidding? The thing was on Netflix forever. You just could have clicked and watched it any time.
They didn't know to, because they didn't know what it was. Like, if you didn't grow up with it on PBS, it's like some of us, it's unfathomable to not know what Red Dwarf is. But to people who didn't grow up with it, we sound like lunatics.
Well, so, we talk about toys every week. I think some people would say that already.
I mean, contextually.
Okay, well, look. They just announced two more seasons of it, so you got a chance out there, people.
And before you think that maybe the earlier seasons were the best stuff, the last season, Red Dwarf X, was one of the best seasons of the show.
Yeah, I seriously dug Red Dwarf X.
Yeah, and coming off of Back to Earth, which was really weak. Surprisingly so. And I was terrified watching, like, when I first turned on Red Dwarf X, like, season 10, because I was like, oh my god, if this is more Back to Earth, then, like, this is going to be like watching Simpsons right now.
Like, Back to Earth was like, well, this might be the last thing we ever get to do, so let's just make it just fangasm, just like all these references to everything.
But that's the thing, it was like that for the first 20 minutes, and then it became this really weird, prolonged Blade Runner parody that needed to end. And it just kept being more and more Blade Runner, and I was like, look, I get it, you like Blade Runner. This is not a very good parody of Blade Runner. And I was like, your opening 20 minutes was just Red Dwarf, and then it just turned into Blade Runner. And I've tried really, like, there's parts of Back to Earth I do enjoy, and there's bits, like, the storyline aspect of it I've kind of liked, but
The finale with a writer I thought was, like, actual, like, Red Dwarf feeling to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, like, once they got, like, they just got so up their butt with the Blade Runner stuff that I was like, you know, I was like, oh, right, this isn't Grant Naylor anymore. This is just Doug, who needs to be shaken every now and then. But yeah, go watch Red Dwarf. It's basically what More Than Meets the Eye sounds like in my head. I hope that answered your question, Mr. Bias.
Rung is going to be Crichton in my head next. I know it.
He's so in my head. If I guess with Rung, I could kind of say he feels like a mixture of like a touch of Crichton, a touch of Data, and then like some kind of very soothing empathy binding those two tones together is the best way I can put it. I don't know who that would sound like. We have one more listener question from Badlander86, which says, "Hi, crew. Here's a long, multifaceted question that has me curious about the state of crowdfunding and the third-party independent transforming toy scene. The gang has spoken at length about how eventually third-party independent companies will need to go to more original ideas and designs to remain sustainable, but find it difficult to break from the crux of the G1 inclined fan base. However, can that fan base also propel them to doing other more original IPs? Fresh off the Four Horsemen's Mythic Legions Kickstarter, I went back to remember how I even got familiar with 4H's old work. It was through the Masters of the Universe line, and for all the grief that line gets, it can't be denied that they sculpted and designed great figures which earned them a major following amongst MOTUC collectors, whom I believe definitely would have spectated their other work and would have invested some money into the Kickstarter based on their familiarity with Four Horsemen's portfolio." I'll just throw in there, that is absolutely correct. They did great work on that line, and a lot of the blame of how things went badly in that line comes down to how their sculpts were executed into production toys. Go look at New Adventures Skeletor. End of story. Question continues. Could the same thing work for the independent transforming toy companies? Here's a couple of questions that I have. Considering that most of them are located either in Japan or China or both, would it be a challenge or more of a challenge for them to crowdfund to an international audience? While it tends to be over-exaggerated, people often turn a sideways glance at anything made in China as a sign of a lesser quality product. Could this stigma be a challenge as well? Finally, if they were to attempt kickstarting their own IPs, can they do so without referring their old IP infringing products? Would acknowledging their past work on a more open platform expose them to more legal risks from established companies? Sorry for the long question. Hopefully it sparks some interesting debate and answers. Thanks. So, we have talked about this, several times, us and, me and Seth and other people too. So I figured that we could just sort of go nose deep in this and just swim around a little bit, talking some whatnot, just going to the points. I don't think their location will be a factor as to crowdfunding, since it's still going to an internet audience, as long as they have an English-speaking rep who can make them a good Kickstarter campaign or whatever platform they choose. I don't think that their location will enter into things. This is not a great example, but two Japanese game developers have had very successful video game Kickstarters, and I believe they're located in Japan. So,
yeah.
And the production of some of the English-speaking Kickstarters projects for toys have been done in China, so I don't think location factors into it, unless either of you guys have any ideas about that. Like, I don't think
location matters at all.
Yeah.
It's all just about communication, and I mean, the internet's international, and it kind of follows along the same with the next question.
Yeah, like going off that, like, I don't think Made in China will have an effect on any of this, given that, I mean, Four Horsemen's toys are made in China. So
right. Many, many things are made in China now, and it's more a matter of the quality of the factory that they have versus anything else. That's always the way that it is.
And it's often been implied some of these companies own their own factories, so on that level, that's actually a step up that they would have over some other campaigns. Mm-hmm. I know many Kickstarter campaigns have run into real brick walls trying to figure out the production part of what they're working on. So if it's a company that already has a production pipeline, that's one less thing to worry about and one less thing to fund, because they don't have to worry about creating that relationship. And the last bullet point, which I guess could be the first real, like, heavy bit of discussion, a bit of a yes or no question too. I don't know this. If say Fans Project started a Kickstarter and said, "Hi, we're Fans Project who made these Fans Project toys," does that expose them to any further legal risk?
I wouldn't think so.
Not that they haven't already faced with what they've done.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually hoping to open this up to listeners on this part especially. Like, if anyone knows, like, by going on Kickstarter as a platform with a campaign, does that open another legal weakening spot in their armor that could be struck? Because as far as I could tell, that wouldn't really do anything. It would prevent licensors from wanting to get involved with them to license IP to them. But
yeah, I mean, because the biggest thing is, it's, you know, if let's say Hasbro was going to go after them, they would go after them when it happened, and they're going to be able to, if it's actually something they can do, they're beholden to do it as rapidly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was something where, you know, they released, you know, we'll go back to the, you know, the Iron Factory Ultra Magnus, if they were going to come down on them, they've got to come down on them right off the bat. Otherwise, it just looks like, okay, they're all right with them, we'll just do whatever, and then it becomes a thing that, you know, in court rapidly becomes argued, well, you know, if you knew about this for a year that they were doing this, and then you didn't come after them until later, well, why not?
Yeah.
You know, and then it becomes something that's a defense point of, like, no, look, it's, you know, just the way that it is now. So if it's with the delay that generally goes on with Kickstarter stuff, it's nothing where they would have, I don't say they wouldn't have a leg to stand on, but they would have a whole lot harder fight to go back against them to say, oh, 4 years ago they made this thing and 3 years ago they made this thing. And you might be able to say that it's a history of it, but unless they're continuing to do IP infringing things, you know, if they're doing their own IP or have been licensed, then it's really hard to say, well, what you did in the past is, like, well, yeah, the past is the past. You didn't do anything about it then.
Do you think that,
why are you screaming now?
Do you think that there's any tunneling through the platform, like through Kickstarter, that could be done to get information that they wouldn't otherwise have had, like who some of the folks are by name or whatnot? Yeah, I couldn't, because I mean, if that was information that was really desired, I assume that could be strong armed out of a retailer somehow.
Yeah, right.
I
don't even think you'd need to strong arm.
No, probably not. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, there are a couple of companies now where some retailers have said, like, easy example, Kapow has said that they are waiting to hear about improvements in production quality from, I believe, KFC and Warbitron, and until they hear something, they are choosing not to carry their products anymore. That's not bad blood, but I mean, there have now been situations of retailers who do not carry certain companies' product.
Oh, I remember that Exodus of iGear stuff. Back
when
most of their releases were straight up masterpiece knockoffs.
Yeah. Well, that was a case of, like, there's more of a solid claim here than a lot of other product, because these are literally modified masterpiece Starscreams. So yeah, I don't, going to those bullet points, like those specific bullet points in here, I don't think are anything to worry about. But to the greater conversation, Four Horsemen, I like, they are always the group brought up when it comes to toy Kickstarters. And I think that in the case of the Four Horsemen, they have been laying down the mythos of their production and their, you know, their team since the McFarlane Toys days. Right. And they have an enormous amount of longevity to go with, from what I'm told, really good business skills and really good connections in various aspects of the toy production world. They are a great example of, like, this is toy Kickstarters, but I've had it explained to me in a way I understood that it is difficult to say that other people could be the Four Horsemen as well. They have a longevity to their practice that it's simply a case of numbers almost and the fact that they have kept up their practice throughout that time. They have an accrued amount of experience and connections that a lot of people simply are not privy to, which is why I'm really happy that they are using Kickstarter as a platform, because it means that we are getting these successful, well-run toy Kickstarters that make the platform more viable in the first place. But I still question whether even Fans Project could just go, like, hey, we're Fans Project and we're going to kickstart this new original idea that we're doing, which is still a robot that turns into a thing. I think that they would have a greatly diminished amount of attention, just given what I read from the customer base. But,
well, we kind of have a little bit of experiment in that with Steel Corps.
Yes.
Where it's not technically a Transformer. It does the same thing, but it's our own character. And among collectors who know what it is, there's a demand, but you don't have much reach beyond that.
Yeah, like, Steel Corps has this incredible demand when one shows up on the market from a very small number of people. And, like, if you start going outside of the audience, the tone on Steel Corps changes really fast. Like, I've seen it. Like, you go outside of the wheelhouse of enthusiasts just about Fans Project or about engineering and transforming robots, you get to people who are more interested in the Transformers characters, and people just go, like, yeah, it looks neat, but it's not anyone I know, so I skipped it. And that's not their fault. That's not a bad outlook to have. But I still feel like that's the norm right now. So I'm trying to think, like, do you guys have any ideas, like, how one of these companies could do the push to move into original IP?
You'd still have to really border
the
existing IP, I think, until you got, you know, the Four Horsemen keep coming up, and they were more or less official and really got their name and then were able to do other things.
And they were official on multiple things.
Right.
Like
trying to do it without having the official in every Toys R Us, you know, because people started picking up the Spawn toys and Toys R Us's or whatever and went, wow, these are really cool. And you were able to build a wide fan base so that the thick part of that wide was a whole lot thicker than people online looking at Transformers, getting these third-party toys. You don't have nearly the same base there to start off of. So, you know, it would have to be somebody rolling out of Hasbro Transformers, like kind of like what Play With This 2 was a whole lot of people that we knew. And I think that is kind of where, you know, maybe they need to readjust and come at it again. But that is the way that I see it coming out, because you have all of these names that people that are air quotes in the know on Transformers do good work and work towards it. And that's runs a kind of parallel line as the Four Horsemen part. But I don't think that, you know, as good as many of the third-party toys are, even then, you know, you can say, hey, this is this team doing this other thing. It doesn't have that supporting base.
That's coming from an audience of a couple thousand people as opposed to, you know, the tens to hundreds of thousands that a mainstream big box retailer toy line would see.
Yeah.
And this, again, just that speaks to Four Horsemen's longevity. They worked on the 90s Spawn toys. They worked on 90s Marvel superheroes toys. Mm-hmm. And this is before anyone even really knew who they were. It was near the end of that run when they were making the rounds in toy magazines saying, no, we're the Four Horsemen. We're these guys. This is what we've done. Then they work on Masters of the Universe. And I think at least one other thing during that period, people then see their portfolios and go like, hey, when I was a kid, I had toys done by these guys. And like it's that's a longevity that you simply cannot just manifest out of nowhere. It's an advantage that they have and have leveraged very well. And coming out of people who worked with Hasbro, aside from Play With This too, Boss Fight Studios are former Hasbro sculptors, I believe, or at least have worked on enough Hasbro stuff that they are now able to say, hey, I worked on this, this, and this. You might remember these. And have, again, like, just that they are able to draw from that enormous pool of people who just bought toys based on a brand and are now discovering names that worked on that brand, as opposed to, you know, third party where it's the other way around. It's like, this is fans projects stuff, it looks like this, this is for a subgroup of a collector or fandom, you know. And I have an idea, but I'm going to hold off for now. TJ, what about you? Any ideas on the path any of these companies could take to get to doing original IP through even a crowdfunded platform?
It's really, when you're talking about crowdfunding, especially if you're talking about a brand new IP, it really depends on what you're doing and who you're targeting and the scale of it. Because, you know, we've seen with Play With This too, is they're trying to do something Pretender-esque and try and do the kind of the third-party toy thing on their own. And it didn't find enough of an audience. Mm-hmm. Because, well, they target the right crowd, but maybe they're talking too big on their production. Because, like, I don't think, we didn't even see, like, a prototype before we'd seen, like some dozen or more characters that they had in the pipeline.
I mean, yeah, they Play With This 2 definitely learned a lot of lessons just about the Kickstarter process alone, I think, through what they were going for.
But we have seen it elsewhere. Like, stepping outside of the Transformer and the Four Horsemen realm is, you know, you and I know Galios, and we've seen Kickstarters succeed, you know, Rise of the Beast. Unfortunately, had a mishap in its production cycle, but it did find a crowd and it did get funded because it was doing something unique and targeting the right crowd for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get the feeling.
Well, it was doing that, and it was able to create a product that was so bite-sized that it wasn't a leap of faith to even have one produced, as opposed to you know, a large multi-component thing.
Yeah. It feels like when you talk about Play With This 2's attempts, they're trying to do something that would resonate with Transformer collectors, but it doesn't do what a Transformer collector would want it to do. You know, where so the project had a good idea, but wasn't approached correctly to capture the audience's attention like it should have. Whereas we have seen toy projects, and you know, like with Rise of the Beast, it's one guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one guy and a friend of his with a 3D printer doing all this. But it finds this funny because it's small scale. It's starting small. And you're right. It's an easy investment to make. There's a little risk to, you know, pitching in with that. I think when you have a group like Fans Project or any of the bigger third party companies, you have enough history and you have enough experience that if you wanted to do a third party if you wanted to do original IP stuff and actually produce something of your own, you have enough experience to make something right from the get-go to show this is what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you don't have to mention the history because it's a Google search away. This is all the stuff that these people have done. Oh, so these.
Yeah, I can't imagine on their Kickstarter page going, like, in case you haven't heard of us, here's all of our IP infringing stuff to, you know, color the water of this discussion right away.
Yeah. Well, Fans Project has that unique steel core ability there. You know, like, here, we made this, and it doesn't infringe on anyone's copyrights.
Yeah, yeah, and their membership figures so far seem to be more cores for steel core. And it seems like they are building the basis of something that they can springboard off of. So, I mean, yeah, I think Fans Project still are the ones who are the closest.
Yeah,
I feel like if they started a Kickstarter for something that was just straight up original IP as presented, and it was just a small, like, 3-inch articulated mechanical figure who could turn into like a little block with a nose cone on the end or something, that might go somewhere.
Yeah, it has to do something unique. You know, I'm not talking like you have to reinvent the wheel or come up with some like super Transformer-ish concept that Hasbro's never done in 30 years.
Mm.
It just has to have its own niche and appeal. You know, like you look at things like the Takara's Q Transformers.
Yeah,
they're very simple. They're very small, but they are this unique little nugget in and of themselves, because they are small, cute, and very simple to work with, and they have their own little charm. Something like that. Nothing extravagant, but, oh, that'd be a neat little thing to have.
Yeah, and I mean, this would also ideally be on the crux of getting a writer and an artist together with you to create a world for these things to represent. Which is the key to original IP is there has to be a story. There has to be a story.
Oh yeah.
That's why a lot of people who don't care about the engineering end or the design end are buying unofficial Transformers toys, is because they represent characters that they resonate with. And that's still also I think one of the biggest missing links. Many companies have made a much bigger push to fill in that niche. Mastermind Creations has a comic book with nearly every figure they release. Just to create some kind of binding meat around what they make. So there's conceptually something you can do with them if you don't want to think about the Transformers end for whatever reason. And that's going to be the missing link for a lot of, you know, if crowdfunding projects for original IPs start up from a lot of these current unofficial companies, I think that the media end is going to be the stumbling block for a great many of them. Because it's not immediately the thing that I think anyone would think of as the thing that is necessary. But a lot of people think about these companies in a very small scale, just the scale of a couple thousand people who loudly talk about wanting to buy their stuff. And, you know, these production runs are not enormous. It's a very small audience, and most of that audience doesn't care about original IP. So I almost wonder, like, I think I said this before, I wonder if the key is to create the media first, and at that point, are you creating original IP with the toys, or are you getting someone to create an IP, and then you are connecting with them as a toy maker? Like, I almost wonder if creating the toy at the same time as the IP even would work, because the IP will not exist without the toy, but the toy can't exist without the IP. And if you're making it at the same time, are you like creating a chicken that has an egg for a head that lays larvae out of its ears? Like, I don't know. So it's still a very interesting conversation to have. And it's luckily one that I don't think one needs to have much cynicism about, because now we have successful toy Kickstarters racking up every year, at least one or two more to talk about. So I think we're just really now gliding towards who's going to be the first, like, really high-end built toy Kickstarter. I believe one could argue that that recent Mega Man X figure may well be that. And that's going to be out, what, in the fall? So, you know, we're still heading into a bright new world here. Like, that's definitely not like a company building it from the ground up. That was, if I understand correctly, a Bluefin-backed group who had a whole lot of work done. Like, they were kickstarting more or less the production of the figure. But, you know, those details aside, it is still a kickstarted figure that is, it's a $50 or $60 figure, as opposed to, you know, a lot of the smaller tier Kickstarters where the figures are no more than like $20. So it's still a very exciting platform for toys, which I like, because it definitely had become like a bit of a tired platform for gadgets or for games. And I think that toys still have a whole lot of their own unique identity to carve out in the niche of crowdfunding. So I'm always excited to see what like the future will bring with that stuff. I think we're in a good place, and with more 3D printing options always coming out there, like, more physical prototyping being able to be affordably done before your Kickstarter actually begins. I think, if anything, a lot of these Kickstarters that have gone well or gone badly have taught us you gotta have a physical item to take a photo of when you start, or people will simply walk away. As I believe that definitely happened to Play With This too, and I think that's been happening to a recent Kickstarter for a female G.I. Joe style figure, where I think they even have a 3D printed prototype, but it's like a very old version of the sculpt with lots of notices saying, like, this is an old design, it's going to be heavily updated. People, it seems, who want to back things for toys want to see at least a semblance of the finished thing without a lot of caveats to what they're looking at. In my limited experience, anyway. Do either of you guys have any other ideas about the crowdfunding of transforming toys or toys in general you want to throw out there?
Not really.
I got all excited talking about that stuff.
You did. I let you go. It's okay.
Yeah, I got a podcast with Phil Reed again. That guy knows some Kickstarter stuff. He's able to correct me when I'm like starting to make things up. But then again, I like my little world I make up. So I don't know. There's butterflies here. It's pretty cool. Thank you for your listener question, by the way. Badlander86. We're gonna take a quick intermission break, then come back for some what we got. Sounds like someone got some protective bots. So get ready for that, and talk to you very soon. If we go let a white noise be noise filling your head, could it be us low, we're hitting the red, where the big boys, bad boys, racing full speed ahead, head. When you hit the blue, all you hear is white noise. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. And so, Aaron, that's why I have definitive proof that the CEO of Nestle Company actually eats babies.
Okay, that's cool.
I got photos.
He's just not wrong about water consumption in California.
Yeah, he eats babies. Look, yeah, I'll show you the picture okay. Again.
The two things are not mutually exclusive.
Look at the picture. Look at the picture.
I know.
You see the picture?
I know. Good job.
See the baby he's biting into?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, he's sucking the marrow out of the bones.
Yeah.
But
I didn't tell you that part. That
doesn't mean that he's incorrect that California has bigger issues with their water.
How do you know what infanticide marrow sucking looks like?
Because it's in the picture right there.
Hey, Aaron. Slightly different topic, kind of related, but did you get any Transformers this week?
I did not get any Transformers this week.
Infanticide. Anyway, TJ, you coughed a lot So I'm assuming that you got Transformers this week.
Yeah, I did Transformering.
So you didn't wait for Hotspot, basically.
No.
Okay.
It was one of those situations where, you know, I've got other things coming in. I might as well just wait because I know what this wait was the last time they were slow to get a Voyager class toy out.
And just a quick question. I forgot. Aaron, are you doing the pre-order thing on the Protectobots or are you just waiting to see them local?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking about ordering them online. It looks like Big Bad might be cheaper than getting them locally.
Getting
a set of four. So
I had a nasty discovery over at Big Bad because they have been pretty good with prices on Combiner Wars mm-hmm. stuff. And then I heard like they got RID, Sideswipe, and Jazz in. And so I was like, oh, I mean, those things are starting to be $20 at Toys R Us. I'll just get in there. $40 for the two of them. I was like, oh, no, not you too.
Yeah, no, the set of four was like 68 or something. And that's they're approaching $20 each in stores, and that'd be saving $10-15. So I'm not sure. I need to really look at that and what my apparent upcoming overtime is going to be before I put in an order so that everything stays positive.
So it means you're not part of the current hotspot watch that a bunch of the rest of us are in right now. All right.
No.
TJ, were you about to bring up a pair of Legends toys?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, no, don't pre-order Legends toys for 15, 16, whatever. What were they? Like
$23 for both.
Wait, which Legends? Like, hang on. There's one that was even more expensive, I think.
It's Underbite and Fix-It. Just the two.
Oh, them. Okay.
Oh.
$23.99.
No, I have a different one for you. If you want to pre-order the Legends Combiner Wars, Rodimus, and Skywarp, $32 for the two Legends toys.
Okay, but that's full-size Legends. These are Legions. These are $6 toys at Walmart.
Still, this is not a great alternative to the current Toys R Us malarkey. I was at Toys R Us, and I was like, hey, you know what? I kind of want that Bumblebee toy. In Canada, he's still $19.99 at Toys R Us's. It's happening here, too. I like the Warrior toys, but they're not $19.99. Like, never are they $19.99. And like, speaking as a North American consumer, I will say right up front, but still, it's like crazy, man. And yeah, I saw Underbite and Fix-It as well, and I was like, oh, not you, true. The Fix-It that I want, because he'll go with the other ones. Guess I'll just pick him up from the shelves, because RID actually isn't all that hard to find. Yay!
Yeah, and tell you what... It's easier to find them elsewhere for retail. Like, I know BBTS depend, you know, sometimes their prices go to demand rather than actual cost, but holy crap.
Once you start doing it to mainstream Legends and Legion toys, it sticks out way more than bumping an extra dollar or two onto a deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
The ratio, man, the ratios are a lot different down there. But, actually, that leads me to my next question. Among your what you gots, did you get Groove?
Yeah, I did.
And how did you get Groove? Which package deal did you go for in Groove?
None.
So you just went for solo Groove.
At that point, when I've got those four on the way, it's like, you know what? It's a little bit over retail, but I really don't want to hunt around just for an individual Groove. So let's just go ahead and do it.
All right.
And then apparently it evaporated an hour later, so...
Yeah, solo Grooves disappeared pretty fast. I ended up having to do the Groove Viper Warpath Tango. I don't have them in hand yet, FYI, dear listener. But want to start off down there with Groove, with Legs McCycle?
Yeah, we might as well. He's the only one I didn't have on hand. Hang on.
Excellent. I'm good at picking him.
Oh, yeah.
I've been actually pretty happy with what I've been seeing from the in-hand reports of Groove, because it seems like reports of being a kangaroo were greatly exaggerated.
to a point, yeah, he is extremely long-legged. You know, it is the RID Magnus syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Which, the benefit to that is he does have a lot of jointage in those legs.
Yeah, those thigh swivels are, like, the most pleasant thing to see on a Legends toy.
Yeah, so he can get some, like, pretty good ninja poses going. Like, he does have a lot going for him as far as articulation and posability, though I wish his head could rotate a little bit more now that I actually attempt to get a ninja pose out of him.
He's going
to
get some pliers and just twist. If you can't take it, it's his fault.
Well, no, like, he's a perfectly serviceable little guy. Like, you know, I don't think he really suffers for his combiner's sake at all. And the vehicle mode's nice. It's a clean transformation. I wish his arms pegged in a little bit stiffer in vehicle mode.
Because
they just kind of go in there and there's no peg or tab or anything to hold them there. So it's just friction of the hinges. I hope you don't mess around with them too much.
I noticed that in some of the video coverages I saw. But he looks like he's up there with Blackjack. Like, I don't know if he looks like he's Blackjack, but he looks like he's on that tier.
Yeah, he has a very good figure on his own apart from being a combiner thing. I don't think he does anything like as clever as Blackjack does in transformation. But he definitely hasn't beaten articulation. I wish he had an accessory. Like, that's the one thing I'm kind of lacking on him.
Yeah, I figure I can accept that given he's got, like, he's a tiny guy with thigh swivels, so he's already doing better than the G.I. Joe as far as legs go. I'm okay with that. Well, let's bump up to the deluxes. Talking about those remolds, I was just saying a whole bunch of stuff because I handled some of them for an evening, but do you feel that the three remold guys are doing pretty good as far as, like, being second uses?
I think so. I really don't have any tolerance issues. There's no loose joints to any of them. All nice and solid. In fact, if anything, there's some parts of some that are maybe a little too solid.
I just love the First Aid's robot arms actually tab in when you turn them into a big arm. Because that was such a bummer with Off-Road.
I wish you could do something else besides just kind of tab the arms back to the backpack like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But at least it holds up.
Yeah.
So I will give it that. First Aid in general came out pretty nice. Like, I like him better than Off-Road.
Yeah, I've been trying to champion Off-Road, but man, like, a lot of things have kind of stacked up of like, hey, Off-Road, you don't look like Breakneck. First Aid looks like a cooler version of you. Yeah, like that First Aid head sculpt is gorge.
Like, yeah, that's spot on. That looks so nice. I like that they changed him to a first responder vehicle rather than make him another ambulance, too.
Okay, yeah, I just assumed, like, hey, he's like one of them makeshift ambulances when you're in a position of needing to throw someone in the back of a thing. Listen, I know an EMT, okay? Like, this is all jargon that they use. Makeshift ambulance truck.
Sure.
Throw him in the back of the thing.
I would say he was an ambulance if he had any kind of door sculpted into his back. There's a windshield back there with a wiper on it.
Throw him real hard into the back of this thing.
Just tie him to the bumper, jeez.
Yeah, it's what stretchers are for. It protects his butt. It's fine.
No, but as the first responder vehicle, it's a more exciting choice, I think. Mm. And it kind of lets him find his own identity rather than just being not Ratchet.
Yeah, yeah. And it probably makes his, like, I think that's part of what makes his limb modes look a bit more exciting. Like, I kind of, like, you know, I look at the TFC Defensor, and their First Aid is just, you know, an ambulance box. And so when he turns into a leg, he is just a box. And there's something to that that's charming, but the whole aesthetic of Combiner Wars is a bit more dynamic than Scramble City was. So.
Mm-hmm. But no, I definitely dig him. And I guess because it is part of his, like, classic silhouette, he carries the backpack a lot better than Off-Road does.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't sit low. Like, I'm going off my recollection of when I mess with hard returns, but I remember thinking it doesn't even sit lower. It just seems to feel like it sits lower.
Kind of.
Like, some about it doesn't feel as jutting as Off-Road's.
It's kind of, I think part of that is in character identity, because Off-Road is kind of Wild Rider, and that just does not suit his look overall.
Yeah.
It's a best guess, though. Like, I dread trying to figure out what goes through your mind in such matters.
No, most people shouldn't. Like, I got all kinds of ideas about Blades' blue face, but I'm leaving those alone. Is there, by the way, with Blades, anything remarkable you really have to say about him? Because he's kind of is serving a purpose and doing it really well. But
rescue missiles.
That's great. Yep, they're full of foam and sofas and mattresses and and foam.
That's the one thing. It's like, okay, I don't mind that you just like slap the new head on. The new head looks good.
Yeah.
The blue face paint is like, there's like something like strangely fascinating about it because it's this really weird. It has a really weird shimmer to it.
Yeah, and his face sculpt, he just looks like an ugly mad dude. And something about that plus the blue is really striking.
Oh no, I kind of wish they used the blue in a larger scale or like a larger detail because it's just an interesting look. Okay, so I don't mind like because the body was already perfect. Like, you know, we kind of knew. Okay, Alpha Bravo. Yeah, he's an aerial bot now. We know it's going to be Blade.
Yeah,
we know. So okay, I get that. I really wish they found something else to do with the arms. I really wish they remolded them.
You know what? The Cult of Alpha Bravo is far-reaching. A lot of these, you know, quote-unquote heroes are discovering the heroism of a good loud gun. So
I don't know. They could have been like pontoons or something, you know, like for water landing.
Maybe they're just really tasteless-looking pontoons.
Yeah. I work with helicopters. That's a possibility.
Pontoons just look like missiles fly into a war zone and people are like, what are you doing? It's like having a laugh, bro. It's good times.
You drop them into the lake like bombs and they just kind of float there.
And people scatter and then you go like, no, it's just a joke. Just climb on there. It's fine.
Yeah. Bounce off of them. It's fun.
Yeah. And you got to deal with war in your own special way. So it was Streetwise. I don't know if you had many problems with Dead End as far as like him holding accessories or whatnot. Like mine actually is a bit more solid than a lot of the reports I've read about his, like, you know, as far as his legs tabbing together to form a forearm or stuff. But I found my brief time with Streetwise that he held his shotgun way better than Dead End holds any of his stuff. But I can't remember how things went with the hand foot gun. Are you finding that Streetwise has got a better grip on things with his pegs and ports?
I actually haven't. Like, tried him out like as a hand in order to test that.
I mean in his robot mode, like just when you stick accessories on him when he's on his own.
Yeah, I haven't had any issue there.
Okay, yeah, because Dead End's like shoulder holes are a little bit and his hand holds or his hand holes are a little bit but I recall Streetwise feeling a lot more solid.
Yeah, I'm testing him out now and everything's kind of. It takes a little bit of a twist to get in, so everything's nice and solid.
Excellent. And
my Dead End had the problem with not getting his legs tapped together in vehicle mode completely.
Okay.
And Streetwise does not have that problem.
Yeah, like that Dead End mold, and I heard that Breakneck, at least from a couple of those early reports from folks who got samples, it sounds like Breakneck is up there with Streetwise. Like that mold is like going through reverse mold degradation in the best way.
Everything's tightening up.
Yeah.
I can understand it in this one because they had a chance of remolding parts, but that's kind of strange that Breakneck ended up better, too.
Well, I mean, we've had toys like Windblade's tolerances were tweaked for her quote-unquote second run, so I figured you know, that tweak pass got done to the Dead End mold.
Okay, yeah, that I can see.
Yeah.
But again, it's one of those... He does a nice job of not being Prowl.
Yeah.
That's the hard part about the protective boss because like we've had all these vehicles already. Like,
yeah. I mean, he was my makeshift Prowl when I was a kid.
Yeah, I didn't know the difference. You're not Prowl. You're not Ratchet. You're not Inferno.
Yeah. And again, also, I think that his head sculpt is great. Like, I think that the protective bot head sculpts I would put above a whole lot of the Stunicon and Aerial Bot head sculpts. Something about them is like the layering of their facial parts. It really worked for me.
Yeah, they've all got a nice dynamic look to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's shape and characters to the head sculpts on these guys. They are very nicely done.
And a triple-barreled shotgun. Wonderful, perhaps poor timing accessory for the police car guy, but it's like, okay, these guys are the protective bots, but they all went through some fish, man, and now they're...
There's part of me that wishes he actually did keep the big pipe from Dead End just so he could use it as a baton.
Yeah, like a nightstick?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Like, at least, I mean, the upside of the shotgun is, like, you can actually stick it on his vehicle mode without it looking kind of funny. Whereas, like, okay, Dead End's pipe is like, yo, you forgot to connect this.
So we're so in the mood to, like, trick out our car, we forget that it has to actually do something.
Yeah, like, both ends of this pipe just go to the open air. What's this for? And it's like, style, man.
We drive down the road, it makes a, like, cool whooshing noise.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk to you a bit about Rook then, because I didn't expect much from him when I messed with Hard Returns, and he was really? Definitely like, so I expected him, because this is me coming off of Off-Road, I was like, he's going to look cool, but I'm sure he's just going to be like the other three, and holy crap, especially once I realized his frigging ankles tilted, and I was like, where did this come from?
Everything about this toy had me excited when I was looking at him, because it hits me in, like, so many spots as a Transformer. It's big-shouldered, it's powerful-looking robot. And, oh, it transforms so nice!
Yeah, that transformation came out of nowhere for me, because I was like, he turns into a box on wheels. He's just gonna go, he's gonna be like, blip, 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 like the rest of these guys. But, like, hell no. He's, like, got these little things that is even turning into a limb, all these little steps that I... Good.
Oh, the limb is so good. Like, he's got the best arm mode of any of the Combiner Wars I've seen so far, because it's all just designed to compact into these nice boxes.
So, like, everyone is gonna get remolded into somebody, and I know that he's commonly being bounced around as being one of the Combaticons, but, like, I almost want to think, like, did you see the design art that they have for him in his comic book, where he's got, like, the hand mounted in the front of his vehicle mode?
Oh, I didn't notice the one mounted on his vehicle mode.
No, yeah, in his design picture, the design sketch or CAD for his vehicle mode, they have him, they open the front of the vehicle through transformation steps and mm-hmm. attach the hand-foot gun in there, and that hand-foot gun had twin drills on the front, if I recall correctly.
Oh,
so I was like, is this guy going to be one of the Computron guys? Because that would be pretty cool, too.
Okay, now his hand-fist-foot thing, I'd call them missiles before I'd call them drills. You could call them drills, maybe.
I mean, the one in the CAD or whatever in that design pick, I think, had, like, a different hand-foot gun sculpt. I don't have the comic, and I don't have the picture in front of me, so I might be getting all this wrong. I just remember that something in those design pictures really made me think, like, there's a way to turn this guy into a drill tank that would work.
I would really hope so. Well, the fact that he's got a port right in the front.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Okay, if anything that turns into a drill can be stuck on there, okay, fine. You got a drill tank.
Like, just the idea that, like, hey, this is, like, a really weird sneak preview of Nose Cone also got me sort of excited.
Mm. No, I'm in the camp that's fully expecting him to be Brawl
mm-hmm.
down the line. Just because the way he transforms, I could very easily see those, like the wheels that end up on his legs turn into one tread, and then some an extra part to add treads to the front as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a hard leap, and it doesn't take a lot of remolding to get that done. And actually, it'd clean up his robot mode a little bit, because, like, the only thing that bugs me about the design is that little piece of shell hanging off his forearm.
Mm.
But it doesn't get in the way. It's just, like, weird. Like, any other time I'd expect that to fold up or something.
Yeah, but it sounds like even in his limb modes, like, it sounds like he's enthralling enough that, like, he's a welcome remold on most any future team.
There's part of me is like, okay, of all the times that they've been reusing all these molds, give me, like, four Rooks.
Yeah.
Just so I can see how solid that looks. Like, the arm mode doesn't even look like a vehicle.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have wings or bumpers hanging off or the robot arms just, like, as vestigial limbs hanging off the shoulders. It's a brick. It's a big brick shoulder and a big brick arm.
That's great. Like, just even just the idea that we've got another figure where it's like, I'll just take four of them in maybe different colors and I'll be happy. Like, I felt that way about Air Raid.
It's such a fun toy. Like, just the amount of goofiness you can do. Like, his hand is molded so it can be a tank turret on top, which is another part of me that's going, this will be Brawl soon.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, you do the Hulk hands thing. That's even in the back of the comic that you can do that.
Yeah, and I mean, that thing is cool. And then with all the add-on hands coming out, he's like the perfect... He's the figure to hold on to whatever add-on hands you might have picked up that you're not using. It's It's like, here, take these. Because like the Perfect Effect ones are out, Non-F Thandius is working on his own add-on hands. Like, maybe it'll just be the two of them, but still, like, the, you know, there's a place for all this stuff to go.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, the Hulk hands thing is really endearing on that guy. it's so endearing. That's why I was so surprised when I was messing with Hard Returns and I saw the ankle tilts. And I was like, wait, so two really endearing little things that aren't really necessary? This is great.
No, but it's fantastic. Like, a lot of that, like, if you've not gotten into Combiner Wars for whatever reason, if you were the guy holding out for Protectobots, this wave spoils you.
Yeah, that's like the best hits wave of everything out so far.
Yeah, and then the new guy is better than all three.
Yeah, and then you get a torso that is apparently, like, I didn't mess with it a whole lot, but I would say easily up there with Silverbolt. Maybe not as good, but super close. And wave three ships with a Silverbolt remold, so boom. Like, wave three is the winner right now.
Oh, yeah.
And you get the Power Glide redo as well, so you get like a Target Master gun. Like, if wave three had a Blackjack redeco instead of Warpath, that would be like the wave of Combiner Wars.
Yeah.
Thanks for screwing everything up, Warpath. Pow, Zowie,
it's
whatever.
All your fault.
Just speaking to the remold possibilities, like when I was messing with Hard Returns Hotspot, I was basically just, I spent the whole time after I turned him into a torso once, I was just sitting there going over like, here's all the different clever ways this thing could become Onslaught. And there's a whole lot of clever ways that thing could become Onslaught and a Bruticus torso. So I'm stoked about future Combaticons. Like, the fact that I'm stoked about the Combaticons based on the idea that at least half of them will be remolds, I think really speaks to how well Combiner Wars is doing.
Like, especially when you realize how many like, if any team has gotten overused over the years, it's the Combaticons.
Yeah, to make me excited about them one more time.
Yeah.
You know? Not only that, but remold Combaticons, and I'm all stoked. I'm like, oh man, Hotspot Defensor's torso. Imagine when this becomes remolded into Bruticus, how great that will be. Tell someone 5 years ago that I'm saying that. They're going to be like, what, are you insane?
But this is how good Combiner Wars has been. Like, I'm not just excited to get Combaticons of these guys. I'm excited for the Combaticons getting repainted. Like, give me a Ruination, and I'll buy it in an instant.
Yeah, yeah, Ruination. And, I mean, friggin', come on, G2 them. Give them that. Don't make the G2 Bruticus be that one. I like that G2 Bruticus, but, like, especially now, those of us who were the few who do like Fall Cybertron Bruticus, I think we can all also say, no, they're doing it better now. We had a cool toy in 2012, playable toy, very abused toy, very hard to defend. There's no way I'm telling you that that's a better toy than Combiner Wars. It's not.
It
has some cool concepts that maybe I wish were in Combiner Wars, like built-in hands and feet as opposed to accessories, but, like,
I don't know. Like, I've had fun with the accessories as separate parts.
I mean, I have too. I'm always tickled when I see like full integration. That's also why, like, I'm gonna probably try to, budget allowing, get at least one copy of most every hand or foot add-on for Combiner Wars, because it seems like actually not that many people are doing them. And I'm gonna try them all out. I think that they all have a place. But I'm most engaged by the idea of a hand that also turns into a foot that also turns into guns. And I'd love to see someone do like a $20 version of that. Like, go nuts with it. Just add a few things that couldn't fit into the budget of the existing hand foot gun. Just now we're like hitting wave three. There's still so much potential in unofficial and official directions for this Combiner War stuff. It's so exciting. I really am enjoying like just how excited I am about the current mainline. It's very pleasant. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you and me, we're in Hotspot watch now. It's almost worse for you because you've got the Protectobots sitting there. So
it's doubly worse because Hotspot's one of those toys that survived my childhood. Like, I've been wanting a proper upgrade for so long.
And Hotspot is also perhaps the best toy of the five. So it's like, I'd say
I'm staying good. I can just sit back here and wait for it all to come out. And...
Yeah, well, don't worry, Aaron. It's wave three. It's not wave four. It's wave four when everything starts going kind of funny.
I guess that's true. That is when it tends to go sideways.
And guess what? Wave four sounds like it's going to be the Masquerade wave. So those will be cute. I'll probably still pick him up because whatever. But if that's like, I'm hoping that the pattern holds true and that the first three waves are the ones that, you know, in decreasing levels, still are ones you can readily find depending on your city. Because if I recall correctly, isn't it usually wave four or five when you start hitting the wall of like smaller towns may end up never seeing them?
Yeah, there. Oftentimes it's sometimes three, wave three, but in that range, you'll end up with, you know, places that don't have a whole lot of turnover, just don't get it because nobody's buying it.
Yeah, I'm leaving out wave three because I'm trying to be kind.
Yeah. But yeah, it starts to get rough in there, and then it'll oftentimes clear up for like the late end of it, but not the last wave.
That's why I'm kind of hoping the last wave has some really cool quirky stuff, because holy crap, like, you know, the last waves that you often end up, depending on your town, being able to find like a Winners or a Marshals.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if the last wave of Combiner Wars is just something really cool and quirky, but it ends up at Marshalls for like $5 a figure.
Oh, jeez.
Imagine if that's where they put my sweeps. Like, holy crap.
Oh, no, don't do that.
I'll be combing Marshalls like I was for Deluxe Viacons back when Prid ended.
If those come out in the the discount chains, it's like, I'll fill the room with them.
Well, you remember, what was it? That German chain, Aldi's? Remember the Aldi's $5 Prid Viacons?
Oh, yeah.
The same time when I was finding those, Five Below started getting $5 Prid Viacons. Like, that was dangerous. And I'm imagine if that happens for, like, a troop-buildable Combiner Wars limb.
No.
You know, thinking ahead to, like, end of 2016, like, that'd be a fun way to end this whole thing if it ends up, you know, coming to an end at that point. Anyway, TJ, did you get any other Transformers this week?
No, I don't think my inner child could accept any more at that rate.
Well, I got a Transformer that I got on eBay 2 months ago. It shipped with the slowest shipping, apparently.
Wow.
But I got, it was a decent deal, so I figured I'll go for it, because why not? It was like, I think, 35 or 40 shipped. But it's the Japanese version of Deluxe Windblade, who has the better paint. So I got it, and the paint is better. And the tolerances, I'd heard from people the tolerances were a huge step up on the Japanese one. I don't really feel they're a huge step up. They're better, but they're not a huge step up. The heels still implode. But her sword scabbard does stay attached to her hips to the point where I can lift her up by the sword scabbard and shake her and it doesn't fall loose. And that's way better than American Windblade. There's only one bummer on mine, which is that she's got some paint slop on her face. So the blue eye makeup, it all looks fine on the right side of her face. But on the left side of her face, the blue eye makeup next to her eyeball, like the metallic blue, it appears to have semi-evaporated before the figure was packaged up. So some of it just isn't there. And then the white paint of her cheek is also all over the side of her black helmet. Now, that's an easy fix, obviously, but it was still a bit of a bummer to see, because I was like, oh, man. Because it does look way better. I haven't yet pulled out my repro-labeled American Windblade to compare it to. I'm going to do that for the video. But it definitely is a very nice-looking figure. The package is actually really cool, like the little box she comes in. There's a lot of, like, G1 grid to the box. And the name on the side is actually like G1 style with like, it's the black code and then the yellow box with black text in it. Very throwback. Her artwork is still ridiculous where she's like riding her sword handle like a thing. But the figure does look pretty good. If she remains, like if she gets reissues and, you know, is attainable for like $35-$40 and you really like Windblade, like this is definitely the one to get. But if you're willing to go through the American plus repro labels route, that's still viable if you're okay putting on repro labels. Unfortunately, hers are metallic ones, so if you don't clean the figure really well, they may fall off after a little bit of a day or two. But I don't know. I was happy to get a hold of it. I had to ditch my pre-order due to money situation at the time of release. And I'm happy I didn't have to pay up to get a hold of her, because I had heard so much good about the Japanese version. And most of that has held up. I think there was maybe a little bit overstatement about the tolerances, but I'm digging it. So that's my on topic. What we got? Let's go off topic. Aaron, did you do anything getting wise this week?
Quite a bit. Actually.
Oh man. How many modulars?
None.
Oh.
Well. Actually, there's no Lego this time around. It's kind of surprising because my birthday's upcoming. And
what did you do?
Kind of got some early birthday gifts and some stuff for myself. But first off, I got myself a pair of Bluetooth. I wish I knew remember the name. They're from LG. They're wireless headphones.
To search for Bluetooth.
They sit around the neck. Yeah, I was trying to look and find, but I couldn't.
I'll Google search for Bluetooth headphones. Oh, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. But they're really nice. They last me all day at work, listen to podcasts or music or whatever. Awesome. And it's nice because there's no cords. A little bit rougher on battery life on my phone, but...
Well, and on a podcast, there's not much audio lower end to, like, lose in the wireless transfer. Have you tried them with music?
And even with music, they're real, real good. They have a good, strong bass to them, and they actually have a little bit of active noise cancellation.
Cool. So you don't feel like an overt loss of quality through the wireless aspect,
right? Yeah,
that's great.
They're pretty good. They're good enough that I've sat there and had something going on, and then I actually had to have somebody like tap me on the shoulder because they want to talk to me. It's like, oh, whoa, sorry, heck, I had earphones in. I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. You just seem like you were in your own world. I'm like, yeah. I didn't hear the damn thing. But I actually picked these up at there's a couple of like the thrift store second, third run type places, and I got those for like $20. And I thought, well, for $20, because I'd always thought like, wired headphones just the same, right? But at $20, that was almost like impulse buy territory, so I thought I'd give it a go, and turns out I like it. So I went for that.
Wicked.
Let's see what else. Non-action figure-y. Alfie got me a early birthday gift of a creme brulee torch.
Ooh.
So I actually have a good high power, easily directable torch for when I want to do like my sous vide steaks or anything like that.
Are you going
to
at least give creme brulee a try?
I have in the past.
Okay.
And that's something that takes a whole lot of practice to do well. But actually now having a good torch for it will also go a good long way. But it's butane, so it's a good high direct heat. That I actually made steaks shortly after I got that. I went out and got steaks specifically for it. And it is very nice to just be able to paint the brown on it and really be able to get in tight with it and do a real good sear on it.
I was just going to say, like, even if you don't want to make creme brulees, it's like, it's called a creme brulee torch. Give it a try once to say you did. But if you got the experience, go for it.
I will. And again, it's something where, it's more having a reason to do it.
You really like to have surprisingly tricky dessert to make. I had some creme brulee recently, and it's weird. I like creme brulee if I'm eating it, but it's like it's like the top level of tricky to eat.
Right.
It's like, oh, I got to shatter the top, and I got to eat the creamy parts, and I can eat the hard parts up top, but that's more hard. And
yeah,
I like cake more.
It's a process.
Yeah. It's like me with lobster. I appreciate lobster, but I'd like it if someone just handed me a pile of lobster meat.
You don't want to spend 20 minutes fighting this crustacean on your plate.
I understand the satisfaction one can derive from that, but I tried it and I did not derive that satisfaction.
Yeah.
So
do have that, and it's nice to have another tool in the proverbial toolbox. I think the next time I make steak, I want to do a dual method of taking my cast iron skillet out to the grill to get it rocket hot on the grill, since that is much more direct heat. And then have the creme brulee torch on top. So
you're doing like top and bottom at the same time.
Right.
All right.
And hit it from both sides. I've seen people talk about that when making steaks sous vide style.
Do you just have like a metal glove you can put on while you're handling the...
That's a good question. I may need to look into that.
Because I could see I'm not saying that you don't have protection, but I could see like doing simultaneous heat sources as being a great way to forget that one of them is on.
Yeah, I would heat the cast iron skillet in the grill and just leave it there, and then probably have I know what I'd have tongs and, you know, crack the top open, maybe kill the heat at that point because the skillet's as hot as it's going to get, and I'd only be using the skillet for about 2 or 3 minutes max. So it's not like having the heat underneath it would give it more at that point.
So I got another weird idea.
Cast iron takes a while to heat up, but it keeps the heat really well.
Could you, you know, make a steak and then in the process of making it, pour the creme brulee goo over it and then make a creme brulee shell around the steak?
You could.
I'm not sure if that would actually do anything useful.
I'm not sure why you would.
Because you can. Isn't that not the reason of science?
Yeah.
What if it just somehow ends up being amazing? I don't know.
But yeah, that it was a good start and some fun. So see where we can go from there. But otherwise, I also got myself a Marvel Select pizza dog that came with a Hawkeye figure.
Hawkeye? Who's that?
The Hawkeye?
Yeah, he's... No, you're thinking of DC. That's the guy with the mace.
No.
The Hawkman.
That's Hawkman.
Yeah.
I'm talking Hawkeye.
And Marvel's ripped off Hawkman?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's an archer. Why would you rip off one eye?
That's messed up.
It is my first Marvel Select toy.
Oh, so you've got that really weird scale that they come in?
Yeah. I'd seen them before at comic shops and whatnot, and there are some things that just seem oddly limited to them.
Mm-hmm.
And changing heads and hands seems very dire as I do it. Like, it's an option, but you really shouldn't be doing the option of it.
Is it one of those things where they assume that you have a hair dryer nearby to heat the plastic?
Yeah, that you've got a hair dryer nearby and a perfect source of being able to pull it or push it back on. Because I got the sunglassed head off relatively easy, and I didn't know if I'd be able to get either head back on.
That's annoying, because, I mean, more companies now, I mean, this is the thing I'm happy about, more companies now are realizing, like, oh, wait, we should just frigging use Palm for these parts.
Yeah. And it was to the point where I had, like, I had the head, you know, on the, like, neck stub as best I could, and then was physically jamming him, holding the rest of the body in my hand, jamming him as hard as I could against my leg.
Trying to get that perfect.
To be a solid point, trying to get it to just pop back into place. And I sat there for a little bit and then, like, had to go from the kind of softer, meatier part of my leg up to, like, the side of my knee to bone. And then finally it popped. And I wasn't quite sure if it was the head that popped or my knee. And then it was like, oh, okay, it's on there now. And I turned and I looked at Alfie and I'm like, this is the head you wanted to stay on there, right? Because
it's never coming
not
off.
Gonna come off again. Well, in my hands.
That plastic, like, I don't know if this is helpful at all. If you end up being really stuck and you have to swap something, you fill a glass full of boiling water and just soak the part for 30 seconds. And I mean, that makes the plastic totally wonderful to work with for 30 seconds. But it also means you have to boil some water. And it's like,
right.
At what point does this become me servicing the toy?
Right. You know, I now have a job to mess with this thing.
Yeah.
But no, he's really cool. I kind of wish that all of his trick arrows, like if he had an opening quiver for his trick arrows, because all of the heads on the arrow look really neat and they're all messed up just from their own existence. So it'd kind of be nice if there was a case of some sort to hold those.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like I said, it pizza dog. And to then kind of go along with that, I'd been looking at the Marvel Legends, looking for the Spider-Man that comes with pizza in order to give Pizza Dog a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
And then try the Marvel Legends. And wow. It kind of was doing its job in that I had a leg for a Build-A-Figure thing and was really seriously thinking about getting other dudes just to build a figure and then managed to walk myself back from that cliff.
I feel bad because that's the reason why I'm still constantly saying I'm going to buy Marvel Legends until I actually see them on a shelf. And yeah, then I'm like, this is going to turn into something.
Yeah, we were at Target and they had everything but the Spider-Girl. And I was like, man, it's so close. It's just right here. And then I was like, why am I doing this? I don't need to spend $100 for this. Just looked at the two pizza Spideys and picked the one that looked like it had the better face paint. But instead, that means that one of his shoulders is loose and one of his, like, inside thighs are broken. And then I got to looking at it, and apparently QC is always an issue with these. And that's kind of sad. Because he's really cool and super poseable and like crazy ab crunch that Spidey should have and all sets of hands and fun faces and whatnot. And it's really neat, but at the same time, just kind of broken.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but, I'm going to... That Spidey wave is very... That, or if I ever see the Guardians of the Galaxy wave on sale, like I saw on Twitter originally, that's going to be the kind of thing that would break me. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
That was, I said early on, if I saw a Rocket, that was going to be the end of it. And yeah. I have not yet seen a Rocket. I've seen all of the others and been really tempted to grab them.
Yeah.
But without a Rocket, man, you're going to have Groot. You can't not have Rocket.
Yeah. I've and seen then, that whole wave. Like, it's starting to discount places. And I'm like, that's a rabbit hole I really don't want to get into.
At a discount, I'll do it. Because if I see the Guardians wave for like 12 bucks a figure, it's like, no, I'll do that. I'll do that. It's because they retail out at like, what, 20, 25, that I'm able to go like this is a bit much. But at discount costs, if I ever come across that stuff, like even if I come across half the wave and the ones missing are like Gamora and Star-Lord or something. Like, if Rocket is in there, it's like, well, I know everyone buys him anyway. So, whoa.
But then I was going to try and segue there with that. I got my first Hot Toys joint. I got myself the quarter-scale Little Groot.
Ooh. Is his head still attached?
Yeah, his head's still attached.
You didn't have to go through Daniel's saga?
It moves freely. No, I haven't gone through Daniel's saga. I've not... swapped heads on him, but the head moves really freely, which makes me feel like I could easily see it breaking if force was applied in the wrong direction, but I don't think it will as I'm going to do.
Heated. Like, Hot Toys generally make their part swaps to be like they assume you have a blow dryer nearby.
Right. And quarter scale is a really weird scale to me for this. I would really have liked maybe third or half scale because he's really small. He's 2.5-3 inches tall. And it just seems like if it was a 6 scale to be a prop to go with other things, that's cool. I understand it. Quarter scale seems kind of another one of those like in between scales. That's not quite one and not quite the other. And then there's a part of me that's like, it'd be really cool to have this at like a 1-to-1.
I really wish they'd done 1-to-1 on that little the potted Groot. Like, that's the thing that's like, I mean, it would be more expensive, but it's made for it.
You know? Right. And then that'd be all the awesome. I mean, I got this and it's going to go to the office to be a little office desk tchotchke. And that's what this is designed for. But like a 1-to-1, especially if it had like the face that's like the just reborn or reawoken.
Yeah.
Type of a little bit more twiggy face than his more childish, cherubish face. That'd be something neat too, because it'd be like, why do you have a twig in a pot? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, but, and that would have made it a lot more expensive, but then again, Hot Toys made a 1/6 scale Batmobile, and they're making a 1/6 scale DeLorean.
Right.
They make expensive things.
Yeah, so I mean that's something that I think that they could sell, and I could probably get sold on. But Hot Toys gonna do what Hot Toys gonna do, from everything I've heard.
Yeah, I just saw an articulation demo video today of their Arkham Batman, like the video game Batman.
Yeah,
big old rubber suit. His shoulder articulation is totally borked, And it's a real shame because I was really surprised that his hip articulation is amazing, because they use the line of his outer underpants to make it like a separate rubber piece. So there's an actual action figure joint for the hip. So okay. He can do like full splits and actual like jump kicks and stuff. Just from the waist up, he's all like, ruff, ruff, I'm in a Hot Toys rubber suit. It's going to melt. Ruff. And yeah, I was real happy to see they put up the Vision solicits today. And it looks like Vision's wearing a cloth costume. And yeah. I was like, thank goodness. Oh, crap. That means I want him. Oh, well. Like, man, Hot Toys plus rubber. It just needs to end. They don't know how yet. Anything else on your end, Aaron?
No, I think that runs through all the stuff I've gotten recently.
All right. TJ, did you off topic of late?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start with the usual and get it out of the way. This is all your fault, by the way.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It only took a few years, but we got there.
You worked me down. No. For the listeners at home who don't know the history, this guy showed me something called a Weaponeer of Mon Ka one day, and down I spiraled.
Yep.
Yeah. So the spiraling continues.
Excellent.
Got the new drop of stuff, which is beautiful. It's all gunmetal gray and bright red, and it's beautiful when the gunmetal is the dominant color.
Mm-hmm.
Because the red looks a little bit cheap when it's overwhelming the gunmetal, but made a really pretty armor vor.
Yeah, I resisted this drop, and that armor vor looks like I think it looks like the best Dino Head armor vor that they've done so far. Like, just the color balance really is punchy.
Yeah, it works for it. It does. I thought the winner for the wave was they did a skeleton in gunmetal gray bone and translucent purple under.
Yeah, that's like the one I really like, and I can't remember the name anymore. You know what I mean? Red Law.
Yeah, it wasn't Red Law,
but like, it was like similar.
It's similar. It's a lighter shade of purple.
Yeah, and instead of having like silver paint, he's just got gunmetal bits.
And I'm very happy they didn't paint anything extra, any extra colors on the gunmetal. The head sculpt has black eyes on it, so it meshes with everything.
Cool.
And it looks good on everything I've tried the armor on so far.
Yeah, the gunmetal armor was supremely tempting. I'm hoping that plastic shows up again somewhere else. Like, RoboForce has to get their hands on that gunmetal PVC.
Oh, yeah. At some point, yeah. Aside from that, someone dumped a ton of old Colgrims on eBay, so there's a couple of those in the collection now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Zaire and Triton. I actually made a point to remember the names. And these are, like, one two-tone Mega Man Blue and one vaguely Boba Fettish. It's kind of hard to describe.
Zaire and the Colgrim that was the, like, reverse colors of him were the very first GLaDOS figures I ever got, I believe.
Wow.
Because Zaire and Triton and Colgrim, whatever his name was, were all in the Colgrim store when I got into GLaDOS.
Yeah, these were apparently, like, really old stock that Jesse had lying around somewhere that a friend was selling for him.
Yeah.
I got that Zaire, and it was still in the original packaging with the little stapled cardboard on top, and everything was wrinkled up, and you could tell it had been sitting in a garage for a few years.
Fell behind a chair.
Yeah, something like that, I think.
Yeah. That's cool. I have a soft spot for that era of Colgrim, because that was some of the first stuff I ever saw.
Yeah, that was really tempting, because, like, half of the Colgrims that ever came out were on eBay at the same time, including a jumbo.
Yeah. Or did you ever get a Legacy Colgrim?
No, it's on my wish list.
Yeah, that one, I gotta, like, mine's missing. He's missing, like, he is missing, I think, the order head and the neck stump that comes with that, but otherwise is complete. And that was, like, my very first grail from GLaDOS anything. And I got one off a guy on October Toys for him, and just dove on it when I saw it go up. I think I paid, like, $25 for it, but it was super worth it. Yeah, that's, like, my favorite Colgrim still to date.
Yeah, I'm discovering how useful October Toys is for this stuff.
Yep. No, I found the 3A Legion buy-sell trade board again, and that's been dangerous. I haven't bought anything, but, like, it's when you find the board that has collectors who sell their things much below eBay, it's a dangerous time.
Oh, yeah. Because there's stuff on eBay where it's like, okay, so... This is kind of skipping ahead in the list, but I had my eye on some of the old Founder stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, there was like an Avis Excellus, which is red and white boots and gloves.
Yeah,
like, from the first run, and I was eyeing one of those on eBay for like $60, or it went down to $50, I think. But like out like stupid expensive for a little. You know, not even 3-inch tall figure. Yeah, I'm currently holding one that I spent $10 on.
Yay! I could have bought one of those for $10 back when there were gajillions of them.
Yeah, I've heard the stories.
Yeah, still... I'm not really kicking myself, because I know if I had them, they'd just be sitting on a shelf. But still, they're a neat piece of history.
Yeah, I like the look of the old figures with the paint wash rather than the fine painted detail lines.
Yeah.
Especially on, like, the old Excellus with the torso and head that aren't made anymore.
Yeah. I'm happy I got at least, like, PVC copies of those molds. They're buried in a box, but I have them.
They're there. Somewhere.
Yeah.
No, these were nice. Along with that, got, like, the original Faden.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the standard Excellus and the reverse Excellus. So I've got all that Founder stuff. Most had the boxes and inserts and everything.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a little neat piece of history just to see to stand the original Faden next to like the current one.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, that like you could see just how long they've been working on getting those just right.
Yeah, like seeing the production timeline and like the end results, the cleaner, crisper stuff, and then the older stuff having more of that, like, it's grungier but it's got a bit more charm for it.
Yeah. Like, I can see, like, this looks like independent toy to me.
Yeah. Like,
this was made before we really knew what we were doing, but, you know, I kind of applaud the effort that went into them.
Yeah, totally.
See, but that was one order that came in today. There's another one that's just mostly just, like, miscellaneous stuff. A friend of mine just was selling stuff and, you know, needed extra cash. I think a Dark Origin was the only thing that came out of that that was, like, really, like, noteworthy.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of the Glio stuff, speaking of other rabbit holes that I probably shouldn't be spending any money on, I had Amiibos come in.
It's all right. You're, you know, someone's got to do it.
Yeah, because, you know, no one carries that flag, that banner around or anything. Like, someone has to buy them.
Yeah, I mean, no one else is buying Amiibos aside from all the Rosalinas.
Jeez.
So are you still able to pull off the AmiAmi hookup on Amiibo?
No.
So this was some back alley Amiibo.
My well ran dry.
Oh no.
These came AmiAmi, but it was only half the wave. I could not procure pre-orders for the two new Fire Emblems or Ness, and Ness is the annoying one because it's like the GameStop exclusive here.
Which I hear and understand that is a whole other mess to go through.
Any store exclusive Amiibo is a nightmare to go through.
Oh man, I don't mean any offense to any of you guys out there. I love the fact that I have a whole bunch of people in my social media who are into Amiibo because I get to watch this and I recognize the scenario, but I don't have to engage, and it's like, it makes me
recognize the crazy, but you're fine.
Yeah, it makes
just letting
me
it be over there.
Makes me feel really good. And maybe that's very selfish, but thank you all for going through that instead of me.
I really don't blame. Trust me, it is safer outside the pool.
Yep. Oh, it's so good outside the over here where I walk past Amiibos in stores and I look at them and I laugh and I go, oh, look, there's the Zelda and the Princess Peach. You can hold hands. I know that from a thing. and that's about it. So what channels did you have to go through for any of this other?
Well, like I said, these were AmiAmi.
Mm-hmm.
Like those I got. I've got a friend in Australia who's keeping an eye out. They're a little bit more common to find there, and Ness is not a store exclusive.
Man, Australia. But
I've already missed a couple opportunities on those too. Like it, even like there's really no avenue anymore that's like clean and like this is the way to get it.
It's all been dirtied by the casual.
It kind of has. Because it's everyone who doesn't understand, like, the way collecting works and doesn't, like, see, like I will say Nintendo put out something and say, yeah, we're going to try and rerun the rare ones and we're trying to boost our production numbers. So, okay, you're trying.
Sure.
Casuals don't see those messages. So it's like, yeah, we're buying them up and selling them on eBay for $40 a pop.
To other casuals.
To other casuals.
Who feed the casual food chain. And this is the problem, man. Anyway.
I guess I need third-party amiibos at this rate.
So have you used them in any games?
No.
Okay. I just figured I'd ask. I have
not even attempted it.
I assumed it was a no, but I figured it would be polite to ask.
My appeal to them is still, like, these are characters who don't normally get toys, and I say that knowing that one of the ones I just bought was Charizard. That's a lie.
Well, no, but look forward to the post-game of LEGO Dimensions dropping.
Oh my god.
I think that the fact that you're going to have a powerhouse Toys to Life game, maybe the game will crash and burn, I don't know, but I don't think it will.
Think it will because their Toys to Life are playable.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of it. If LEGO Dimensions does really well, I think that's going to cause all the other Toys to Life giants who want to stay in that genre to start making playable toys. Imagine what happens when Nintendo tries to add joints to amiibos.
Oh no.
Like, they're number one, they're probably going to screw it up in the first wave.
Nintendo's already gotten weird with their amiibo, because they've got, like, a Yoshi game coming out with the Yarn graphics that they did for a Kirby game. And there's an amiibo that comes with it that is a Yarn plushie of Yoshi.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
So, like, the more they do to start, like, messing around with that stuff, like, I don't know. Because of their Nintendo as well, I just see, like, some really weird... The first couple posable amiibos, if that really is the fate of amiibos' future. Number one, probably not going to turn out super well. Number two, holy crap, the craze that will erupt if... Oh, you know, an amiibo comes out whose head can turn left and right.
Nah, but of the like the ones I got. So okay, so it's Charizard. Okay, it's more Pokemon. Okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Got Wario.
All right.
Who's all happy in his biker outfit? So that works. The get for me was Pac-Man.
I forgot he was an amiibo.
That's a neat thing. Like, okay, for as much as you want to crap on Nintendo because they're having some trouble, you know, industry-wise right now, they've got the bank to make a toy of someone else's character.
Yeah. And they're, you know, a nice little Pac-Man. Like, he's a piece of video game history. There's gravitas to Pac-Man.
Oh yeah, like right now my amiibo shelf, I've broken everything up so I can have Pac-Man, Mario, Sonic, and Mega Man all on one shelf, and it's just this little gallery of video game history.
Yeah,
that's the biggest appeal to me right there, is like those four, and like, okay, maybe Donkey Kong if I feel like it.
Yeah,
because he's as old as Pac-Man, or not as old, but
make a papercraft barrel to put next to him.
Yeah, I was actually seeing if he was posed in some way he could hold a barrel. Not quite.
Nah.
There's where you go bad, is the accessory amiibos.
Accessory amiibos.
If they do that Skylander thing where, like, Skylanders has those little chips that scan in, like, items into the game, and if they do that amiibo accessories, and you have, like, Mario with his hammer.
Question mark block.
Oh, no.
And it's designed so you can just line them up next to each other. Troop build the question mark block. Make one.
World 1-1. No, that's what Jack Specific has to do with those little World and Nintendo sets.
I don't know, man. Amiibo could just swing around and go like, you know what? We're going to be the guys who make constructible 1-1, but out of like RFID chipped figurine standy things. Anyway, well, I wish you the best of luck in continuing to track down Amiibos.
Ami Ami already put up two more. Ami Ami's doing something really weird now where they will put the Amiibos up, take all their orders, and then immediately remove the page.
Yeah, because they can't deal with the site traffic, probably.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. Like, they had Jigglypuff and Greninja up for, like, 2 minutes before they were sold out. And then the next day, they were completely gone.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Google hits they're going to get still from the Amiibo, like, machine trying to find stock. Between that and their usual fig arts crashes, like, it's got to wreck their site.
Yeah, I have no doubt of that.
Amiibos aside, anything else on your menu this week?
No. That's about all the soul-crushing I could take.
All right. I don't really have anything else to talk about on my end this week either. I'm trying to think of any... I mean, I did finally have the thing happen with my 112 Mezco Batman, where one of his sleeves did ride up into the elbow joint and get, like, pulled up out of the glove cuff. And thanks to Nick, T16 Skyhop, I was able to apply heat to get the wrist peg and cuff off and fix all that up. So if it happens again, now I know how everything's assembled in there. I used boiling water to do that. Very carefully dipped boiling water so I didn't get the actual costume wet. So that was my adventure. Between that and trying to film Bad Cube War Dog, I had two reviews I was working on that were pretty big reviews, and then like tech difficulties happened during them with the actual toys, which required a clip to be filmed to explain those tech difficulties. Got complicated, but it's all behind me now, mostly. In that case, thank you all for listening, because we're done with episode 356 of WTF and TFW. As always, swing by the sub forum, drop in the thread and say hey, and then I guess something else if you really want to. We'll be back again next week, and we'll have more Transformers to talk, and we're entering the age of the Protectobots, as you heard, so, you know, the weird Transformers droughts that happen, we're probably going to come out of one for at least a week. Look forward to that. Thank you, Aaron and TJ, for joining me, and guess we'll talk to you all later!
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators and they're here to stay.